WFORadio.com presents NHRA Nitro.
I'm Joe Costello, and this is WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. A weekly look inside the baddest motorsport in the world, NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing.
It's side by side, it's competition, and it's who wins, and then the chair of the crowd.
Join me as we go WFO with the stars of drag racing.
Hey, I'm Bob Tasca.
I'm Tony Schumacher.
Hey, you're with Matt Hagen.
Hey, this is Ron Capp, Matt Hagen's personal friend. You're on WFO.
NHRA track announcer Alan Reinhardt stops by each week to break down each race and answer your email questions.
I mean, the Nitro cars put on a tremendous show. They're otherworldly machines. But for people that are really interested in cars, I mean, you wander through the Superstock pits, and if you're wondering why you don't see 69 Camaros running around on the street anymore, it's because they're all out there in the stock and Superstock pits.
Racing fans from around the globe, it's time to go WFO with Joe Costello.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. We're getting ready for the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, the big go. And you first-time NHRA fan listeners, well, you found the right place, the right app, the right RSS. You download it on iTunes. You're sitting in front of your Commodore 64. However you're doing it, you pick the right show to listen to. Get ready, because we've got a monster program for you. In fact, I don't even know who to promote first. We got Brittany Force on the show, getting ready for her first U.S. Nationals as a Top Fuel racer. Also going to talk about all the issues going on at John Force Racing, getting used to the car, canopy versus no canopy, all the storylines. Brittany Force going to be on the show. Also on the show, Clay Milliken. Clay, runner-up out there in Brainerd, runner-up in Gainesville, runner-up in Chicago. This guy is knocking at the door, getting ready to break through for his first win. Could it come at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals? We're going to ask Clay just minutes from now. He's also very active on social media, and maybe you're even listening to this show only because Clay tweeted it out. Well, that's cool. I'm glad to have you. Stick around. We're going to hear from Clay Milliken on the show. Also on the show, we've been talking about the Snake and Mongoose movie, and we've been telling everybody it's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. We spoke with the producer. We spoke with the composer. We spoke with the writer. Now we're going to speak with one of the stars, Richard Blake, plays the Mongoose, going to come on the show, talk about what it meant to get behind the scenes and kind of crawl into the skin of one of drag racing's most notable personalities, Tom the Mongoose McEwen. Richard Blake going to be on this show, and we are stressing to everyone, if you want this thing to blow up huge, you got to go the first night it's in your local theater. That's how the movie theaters out there know to really push this film, Snake and Mongoose, coming to a theater near you. Also on this show, the first edition of our Inside Pro Stock interview series, where we're going to talk with some of the legends and true in-the-know people about what's going on with the Pro Stock class, what can be done. David Rayer of Rayer and Morrison is going to join us on the show to talk the ins, the outs, the ups and downs of what can happen, could happen, maybe should happen with NHRA Pro Stock. David Rayer going to be on this show. And we've got some things that we're working on, and you never know exactly who's going to make it to the WFO Radio NHRA Nitro show or on the phone line. So we've got a big show. Get in, sit down, hold on, strap in, get ready, do your thing, because this is the big go preview show. But as promised, we start them all off the same way with the voice of the NHRA, Alan Reinhardt. Alan, welcome back.
Joe, great to be back. I'm glad you still have room for me after that guest list you just ran down.
It's pretty amazing. Well, it's one of the in-between national event shows that always become supersized, oversized. My producer Giovanni in Miami is always rolling his eyes because they start out like an hour and 20 minutes and end up 3 hours and 10 minutes.
Yeah, that's definitely happened a time or two. But I love the fact that no matter how long they go, everybody pretty much has to wait on me. So I'm good with that.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why we put you first, because we know that we're going to start them all off the same way. And that's a feeling of security, because everything else is just totally up in the air. You never know who's going to be on, except we know that Alan Reinhardt is going to be on. It's security blanket.
Well, you know, I'll set the bar, and then everybody else can try to maintain that level of excellence for the rest of the show.
It's very difficult to do. Very difficult. And you've offered to answer questions this week.
Oh, I did do that, didn't I?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
Oh, it's going to be great.
Dump the Dummy is my favorite part of the show. Zippy.
Yeah, it is. Well, it's my favorite part because I love how you love it. That's the best part about it. We do have questions, but I want to throw out a couple of things before we get to the questions, because this is the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. I think people who take note will note that we're saying the name a little bit differently this year. New title sponsor for this big event.
You know, it's so nice to have corporate Chevrolet get involved. Racing history. Now, I don't know that any engine has had more success over the course of history in racing from top to bottom to everywhere else than the small block Chevy. Obviously, the big blocks have had some as well, but the new generation with all the LS motors are still involved. But they haven't been involved with NHRA from a corporate level for some time. So it's great to have the folks with the bow ties back on board, and, you know, no better place to make a splash than, of course, the biggest race of the year, the U.S. Nationals, or the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals.
Was that hard for you to say as a guy with a Mustang in the garage?
You know what? You got to have somebody to beat. When I was younger, I was pretty anti-everything that didn't have a blue oval on the front of it. But as you get older, you realize that, you know, the technology, the hardware, the pistons don't know what motor they're in. The car doesn't know what the nameplate is on the front of it. And a cool car is just a cool car. So, you know, I do still tend to lean towards the Fords. I've got a 67 Mustang that I've had since high school. But I love having somebody to race. You know, the Roadrunner would never be a hero if you didn't have the Coyote. You got to have somebody to go out and compete against. And, you know, Chevrolet obviously has been a very formidable opponent in every sport that they've gotten into for as long as I can remember.
I love the Roadrunner and the Coyote. That's a great reference. Haven't thought about those guys for a while. That might be why I'm into racing. This guy's speeding around those desert roads.
Oh, I thought maybe you got an Acme kit when you were a kid and decided to put that on your Pontiac, and then that was where you started.
Exactly. I was wondering, why can't I get these roller skates with the rockets on them?
Just be careful, because every time you end up with one of those things, an anvil is going to fall on your head. You got to remember that. It doesn't end well.
No, it never ends well for the Coyote. At one point, you end up rooting for the guy. Now, some big storylines, of course, countdown in...
Actually, if we could back up just a second. I said something in Brainerd last week about the stock eliminator final being an SS396 Camaro against a 428 Cobra Jet Mustang. And I actually had a guy call me out on Twitter that says, you know, you said who wouldn't cheer for one of those? Well, I hate those things. And after a little back and forth deal, it's like, isn't it fun, though, that you have somebody to root against? And, you know, the guy ended up basically saying, well, yeah, that's true. You know, he wanted a Chevy to win so bad, but it's so much more fun when you have a rival that you can go up against. So, anyway.
Well, absolutely. And those passions, that's what keep this whole thing going. Of course, you got to be passionate both for and against in a respectful, hey, let's have a beer after I beat you kind of way. But it's that's what keeps this sport going. That's what the Snake and Mongoose is all about. They realized that, hey, listen, these guys are competitors, but they're also friends. Let's polarize everybody, getting some of them rooting for me, some of them rooting against me, and let's make a lot of money and sell a lot of toys doing it. And boy, did it work.
That was certainly back in the day, and then manufacturer wars were going on back then. And, you know, it's calmed down a little bit now, just I think so much because of the corporate involvement. It's very difficult for a driver to get out and say anything negative about an opponent because he's going to have to answer to some CEO that he's representing, and they certainly don't want any negativity out there. But, there's nothing wrong with the natural rivalries. I think every fan in the grandstands has a favorite when Tony Schumacher races Sean Langdon for whatever reason. Whether it's, you know, the Alan Johnson connection, whether it's the Alanabi team against the U.S. Army, whether it's whatever it is, but you have a connection with those, and I think the rivalries are something that definitely need to be promoted. That's something that we as NHRA could probably do a little bit better job of, and I know that there are some plans in the works to try to do that.
And we always, when we get questions and solicit questions to people through our WFO app or on Twitter, a lot of the questions are about that kind of stuff, about what can we do, what can be done, why aren't they doing more of the rivalry promoting. And the now infamous Humpy Wheeler video that was put out 2 weeks ago about NASCAR talks about exactly this, about how it's difficult with corporations. I think about the radio commercials on the Steve Evans Be There CD that used to be put out, where you would hear Jungle Jim Lieberman talking about how Shirley Muldowney needs to stay in the kitchen. Like, can you imagine that? That's not even possible anymore. We're in such a different world, but boy, did they build rivalries back then.
Yeah, you certainly couldn't get away with something that harsh in today's PC world. But, you know, a classic example, how about if Antron Brown is racing Doug Coletta? You know, you have the two giant tool companies going head-to-head with Mack Tools on Doug's car and Matco Tools on Antron's. Whoever wins that race gets out of the car and says, hey, I got a better car, I got a better crew chief, and I got better tools than that guy. That's why I won. And that would resonate with the fans. They would look forward to the next time that those two guys are going to meet head to head. And, you know, and I don't care who wins the race, but somebody needs to stir that pot a little bit. The problem is that whoever wins the race gets out of the car and says, boy, we're really lucky to beat those guys. They're great guys. They got a great team and they got a great sponsor, and I'm just happy that I get to win this time. And that doesn't generate a whole lot of fan interest for the next time they get head to head. You know, whether it's oil companies, whether it's tool companies, whether it's manufacturers, whether it's teams. You know, if it's a John Force car against a Don Schumacher car, most people in the stands have a favorite, but if the drivers don't promote the rivalry, the fact that, you know what, I'm sick of those guys winning every week, it's my turn, I want to beat him, you don't have to badmouth the guy, you don't have to slam him, but, you know, show a little passion. You know, why did you show up if you didn't show up to win the race?
I totally agree with this line of thinking, and I think that a large percentages of the fans would agree. And it's just about doing it. I think that the drivers are in a unique situation in that, like, we can talk about it and we would love to talk about it. But the person who maybe talks a little smack in that pre-race interview on ESPN and says, you know what, they're going down. That's it. Load it up. And then they smoke the tires. Doesn't want to deal with that moment of humiliation. But I think it's worth it. I think you gotta put your heart out there and talk a little and try to back it up. And if you do, and you do, it's going to work both ways. People are going to be happy rooting against you, some of them. You got to be willing to wear the black hat. Someone's got to wear the black hat sometime.
But it doesn't have to, you know, you don't have to cross the line. You know, I love listening to some of the drivers that are like, well, you know, if I can't win, I hope he wins. That guy's a good guy. Tony Schumacher had a great line one time. He said, if I can't win, I hope nobody wins. He said, I don't want anybody to win. Once I lose, they might as well cancel the rest of the race, because he's competitive and he's not, well, gee, maybe one of my teammates or maybe one of my friends or somebody. He says, if I can't win, I don't want anybody to win. And there's nothing wrong with that. You're not, you know, again, you're not bad-mouthing anybody. You're not throwing anybody under the bus. You're just stating that this race is important to me and this is why I want to win it, and I wish more guys would do that.
Well, we'll see. This is the critical time of year, and hopefully some in the mainstream media are focusing in. This is our quote-unquote Daytona 500, World Series, Super Bowl, whatever is the biggest event in your respective sport that you follow. This is it for drag racing, and followed right by the playoffs, the countdown. We're going to go to Charlotte, which is huge. We're encouraging our fans to go to Charlotte. Of course, I will be there. Get your tickets now. You can click on WFOradio.com. But now is the time for the personalities to emerge. And we're seeing it, Alan, that even they may be teammates, but it doesn't make me feel any better if my teammate is the one who prevents me from winning something that I really want.
You know, last year, obviously, Antoine Brown was standing on the starting line at the finals rooting for Brandon Bernstein. Because if Brandon beats Tony Schumacher, Antoine's a champion. If Tony wins, well, Tony wins another championship. But why wouldn't he come out and say that? You know, I understand from a corporate standpoint, well, you know, yeah, we're team, we're in the same. Do you want to win the championship or not? You know, you don't have to say, I hate the guy. You don't have to say, but what's wrong with going, hey, you know what, I know he's my teammate, but right now I hope he gets his butt kicked because I want to win this. And you just, you know, I think you need to portray that. When Spencer Massey sat on the starting line for 3 or 4 seconds in qualifying because he was lined up, I believe, either with Antoine or with Schumacher first round, sat on the starting line, wait to see what the other car was going to do before he stood on the gas, and then gets out of the car and goes, oh, well, gee, I guess I wasn't paying attention. Why would you lie about that? Everybody in the place understands you're trying to manipulate the ladder. If you want to win the championship, you have to beat that guy, and there's nothing wrong with saying that.
Totally agree, and that is the fun of racing. And if you go back in the day, I've noticed some people, Bobby Bennett, posting old 1979 U.S. Nationals videos and whatnot, with the VCR requiring tracking and whatnot. But that was what it was all about. So many teams, they didn't all know each other personally. They weren't all buddy-buddy friends that were traveling around every week seeing each other every Thursday through Sunday. They were from regions that were parts unknown. There was no internet. There were no cell phones. You would only see them every once in a while. So it was more about you and your guys against these people that you really didn't know. And so I think it was a lot more easy. It was easier to be a little abrasive. And I think abrasive might not be the word, but outgoing and brash is the word that I'm looking for.
I firmly believe that if a Jason Line a Greg Anderson, a Greg Stanfield, a Roger Brogdon. Anybody with a Chevrolet outruns one of the Dodges, he needs to get out of the car and go, you know what, I've had enough of those Hemi clowns. I'm sick of it. You know, it's time we get a Chevrolet back in the winner's circle. You know, obviously there's a lot of respect between all of the teams out there, and that's fine. But, you know, when Alan Johnson gets out of his car and says, you know, hey, I'm tired of Brand X, you know, the Hemi's going to win today, there's nothing wrong with that. You're promoting yourself, not even necessarily at the expense of somebody else, but it at least lets the fans know that this is an important run. This isn't just another, you know, okay, two cars go down the track and who cares.
All right, are you ready for questions?
I was hoping we could use up all the time. Okay, yeah, I'm ready for questions.
Well, that's a subject I would go on forever and ever. I could go on literally forever about that, citing examples, because I think it is so vital. Look, one final point. Nobody wants their racing series to be like wrestling, except for the popularity and the mainstream crossover exposure. And those wrestling guys, especially back in the day, they understood that they can juice up the rivalries. It was all fake. It wasn't even real. The passions are totally fake, and yet people are wrapped up into it. This is real. There are real people going home as losers, feeling like they wasted their time and their money and upset. They've been beaten. They've been beaten down. They maybe made a mistake. Real emotions, not fake wrestling, but real. And we get less excited than the fake stuff, which is suppressing.
Greg Anderson says, I don't want to be the guy that loses to her the first time. He does. You know, he makes a public statement about it and ends up having to apologize. It's ridiculous. You know, he wasn't disrespecting her. He wasn't, you know, he didn't want to be that guy. And so there's nothing wrong with that. But anyway, let's go on.
Exactly. And how good would it have been if Greg had said, I refuse to apologize and I'm going to whoop her next time. And Erica has said, yeah, and we might be in a different position right now. But then again, like you said, the corporate angle is one that I cannot understand. All right, this one coming from Alan, to Alan. Hello, Alan. I'm from Crystal River, Florida, 20 miles from the Gator Nationals' home. Do you think, with Ford pulling out of NHRA, that it's time to look at more imports like Nissan, Porsche, Honda, or others to boost the sport? I could see a Boxster funny car or Pro Stock car. Silly, I know, but what is going to happen if Chevy pulls out too, asks Alan.
Well, in the first place, I don't think that Chevrolet is looking at pulling out or back at all. And, you know, the proof being the fact that they stepped up to sponsor the biggest race we have of the year, the Chevy Performance U.S. Nationals. I think imports, you know, I know for a fact at one point that Toyota was looking at doing a Pro Stock deal. I think there's been at least a little bit of interest with Honda. The biggest issue with getting them involved in Pro Stock would be making either a rules adjustment or coming up with a way it could be done, because as far as I know, neither one of those manufacturers has a pushrod V8 that they could transform into a Pro Stock motor. As far as if somebody wanted to make a Honda funny car or wanted to make, you know, Toyota obviously did it, so the groundwork is there. If somebody wants to get involved in that effort, and I'd love to see it. You know, the more the merrier. Let's get everybody involved.
I used to be totally against it, like vehemently. Kind of what you said about the Blue Oval early in your life, that's how I was against the Japanese and the Germans, I should say. And I have totally softened against that, and I no longer even think that. I think the doors should be wide open to whoever wants to spend money in the sport, employ people in the sport, promote the sport, be in the sport. The doors should be wide open, and to think anything else is cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Well, from a corporate standpoint, I would agree with that. But, you know, from a fan standpoint, if you think the drag racing should be just all American and American cars, how good does it feel every time you watch one of those Dodges beat a Toyota, or every time you watch one of those Fords beat a Toyota? And, you know, that's the kind of rivalry that get people emotionally attached. Is like, hey, my guy beat your guy, my brand beat your brand. So, you know, the more the merrier. And if you want to root against them, that's fine, as long as you're coming out and rooting.
Questions for Alan Reinhart. You can always call them in, 954-889-6796, in between national events. We will play them for him. We got one from Mike in the Bay Area. Actually, a couple back-to-back questions.
Hey, how you guys doing? This is Mike from the Bay Area. This is a question for Alan. Alan, I spoke to you for a quick second at the Seattle race. One thing I noticed, that the Pro Stock cars, they used to roll through and stop in a water box and then proceed with doing their burnout where the back tires would sit in the water, and then they started doing their burnout. Now I've noticed that they roll straight through the water box and then start to do their burnout, and I just want to know what made pro stock drivers change from sitting in a water box as to now where they roll through it. Another question I had was the Ron Capps incident in Brainerd. I noticed when the motor exploded that one parachute came out, and then I counted to about 3 seconds later where the following parachute came out. And my question is that by design, or were both chutes supposed to deploy at the time of the explosion? I was under the impression that both chutes were supposed to deploy under once an explosion took place. Here I've seen one, and then it took about 3 seconds for the second one to come out. And I guess that's about it. I look forward to seeing you guys at Indy. All right, thanks a lot.
Mike in the Bay Area.
Well, we'll start with the pro stock question since that's where he started. Almost all of the racers now roll through the water box before they start their burnout. You just need the tires to be wet, which gets them started spinning. Once they're spinning, it's fine. You know, the engine's going to take over. You don't need to sit in the water for any amount of time. The water is just to help them start. If you watch the sportsman cars, more and more of them will roll through, maybe just do a quick little throttle blip to turn the tires over once while they're in the water, and then they'll roll forward. The pro stock guys have kind of taken it to a whole extreme. They'll roll 5 or 6 or 8 feet in front of the water box. But all you need the water box for is to get the tires wet. And you'll also notice when they're doing the pro cars and the pro stock and the nitro and alcohol cars as well, they will get a big area wet behind the water box. So as you roll through, the entire circumference of the tire is wet. Then you get past the water, and once they start spinning, it's just a matter of, you know, getting them dry and getting them clean. So you don't have to sit in the water for that. You just have to have them wet when it starts, and that's why they roll forward a little bit. What was the second question?
The second question was about Cap's parachute during the explosion.
When the car exploded and the body disintegrates, you know, obviously the parachutes are mounted to the body, so they both at that time are turned loose. Even if the safety system hasn't yanked the cables out as of yet, once the body leaves, the parachutes are turned loose. You know, one just caught air a little bit before the other one, whether it was something aerodynamically with the body coming off of the car, whether one of them maybe got sucked up under the car and it took it a second to release. But both of them are dropped at the same time. One of them just caught air a couple of seconds before the other one. That's not uncommon at all.
And thank you, Mike. And sounds like you'll be in Indy. Of course, anybody who's going to be in Indy will be in Indy. We'll be doing WFO Radio on location there. Make sure to flag me down, say hi, or let's get together for a tweet up. Next question, this one from Ron. Alan, be honest, what was Joe's reaction to the BIR Zoo?
Ask Joe.
He doesn't believe me when I said I thought it was awesome, I guess, last week.
I will tell you true story. And, Joe, I don't know, you might want to plug your ears in hum or something.
Okay.
On Friday night, after qualifying, Joe and I got in a golf cart and went out to take a tour of the zoo. We cruised around for, I don't know what, an hour and a half, 2 hours or something. We expected to go out there for about 45 minutes, but kept stopping and chit-chatting and talking to people. I was pretty much ready to go back to the hotel and get some rest and get ready for tomorrow. So Joe basically dropped me off at the car, got in the golf cart, and he went back into the zoo. So I assume he was impressed, because even after I was bailing out, he was going back in there. So that gave you an idea what his impression was.
I just made you think that. I actually went immediately back to the hotel and went right to sleep.
Oh, is that what you did? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I believe you.
It's called professionalism.
It's kind of like Ron Capps and I when we were in the Winter Circle at Brainerd, and he said, man, that thing was loud in there. And he looked at me and he said, remember that Van Halen concert we went to that one time? I said, nope. And he goes, oh, that's right, that wasn't us. So there's some things that you just kind of sweep under the carpet.
Absolutely. Here's one from Bob in Georgia. NHRA fan from Kingsland, Georgia, here to service a forward deployed unit. He is obviously overseas. If things go as planned, I will be in Charlotte for the race. I have seats. If I do not get there, perhaps you can help me sell them. But that's not what he's saying. He says that NHRA needs to step it up. NHRA results are never run on SportsCenter or the bottom line unless an incident happens. There's no other way to say it, but NHRA deserves better marketing partners, says Bob.
Well, that's actually an ESPN thing. I know that sometimes we are on the crawler across the bottom of the screen. I don't know what the criteria is, what gets us on there or what doesn't. As far as SportsCenter goes, you know, the big thing to do would be contact ESPN. You know, they determine content of those shows based on what they believe that their watchers and their subscribers want to want to see and what is important. If you know, if enough people make noise about the fact that, hey, we want NHRA results, then that's something that'll happen. I think it would be a good time right now to jump on a campaign with Fox Sports One. You know, they've made no bones about the fact that they intend to go head-to-head with ESPN. They intend to try to knock SportsCenter down a notch. They've got first-class staff doing their sports show, their highlights show every night of the week. And, you know, hey, nothing like getting on board with a new operation. If there was a big swell for Fox Sports 1 that said, hey, this is something we want to see, and ESPN started seeing some of their viewers changing networks, that might give them the realization that this is something that their viewers want to watch as well. But if the viewers don't request it, then they're not going to believe that it's important enough to cover, and that's basically the bottom line. They cover what they believe their viewers want to see, and, you know, the old squeaky wheel theory.
Isn't that the truth? And I'll take the other side of the coin. NBC has also jumped in, and everyone is kind of ripping at the flesh of SportsCenter and ESPN because they've had like 20 unprecedented years with no competition in what they're doing, and all the other networks kind of decided, wait a second, we got to get in on here, and they all are doing it. And there are a lot of sports networks out there. Let's just put it that way. And if the drag racing fans were to represent, if a drag racing movie in the theaters does well, if the Courtney Force on the body issue cover wasn't a big deal, there's a bit of a surge going on. You never know what the future holds. And there's no reason we can't be on the sports shows of all of those networks at the same time if our drivers do the right thing, which I think we started the show off talking about. They got to be interesting personalities, first and foremost.
Well, it's a very interesting time right now. There are a lot of things changing in the landscape of sports on television and sports programming, just from different networks to different outlets to different, you know, you look at MAV TV is coming along. Forrest Lucas obviously is going to cover a lot of sporting events on MAV TV that some of the other networks haven't deemed maybe a big enough draw to get airtime. If, you know, viewers start going over there and noise starts being made, then, you know, things are going to change. But it's an interesting time right now because there's a lot of stuff going on, and it's time to, you know, get involved, write a letter, send an email, do something, and let people know what you want to see, what you think is important, and that's where change starts.
Sign on. And MAV TV being in the low 200s right there with all those other channels is a huge deal on my DirecTV. It was difficult up in the 600s when you had to go up for speed or wherever you were going. Now it's right there in the 200s. You can find these channels very, very easily. All right, next question. This one coming from Jay.
Good afternoon, Jeff. This is, of course, Jay from the LPC. Just in shock of hearing the news that Castrol is leaving. John Force Racing was just, I'm in shock. You know, when I heard the news this afternoon, you know, I have no doubt that being the marketing genius that he is, that he will find a sponsor, and it's just going to be very difficult at this particular economic time. No doubt that they're going to see that the charisma that this man has and the power that this man has in the sport of drag racing. There is no doubt, and no doubt in anyone's mind, that 2014, after Ford and Castro leaves, that in 2015, they'll be back with a big-time sponsor, and all will be well with John Force Racing. WFO.
And that, of course, was right after Showtime last week. But what about it? How's that story evolving?
Well, John has a press conference scheduled for Charlotte where they're going to make some announcements. Now, I have no idea what they're about. I just know that I talked to him earlier in the week, or I guess it was the end of last week, and he was talking about the fact that they wanted to make some announcements at Indy, but basically decided that Indy, being so busy with all the stuff going on with the tracks, the shootouts, and everything else that's going to happen, that it might be better off to wait a couple of weeks and make more of a splash when they do it at Charlotte. You know, obviously, Castrol leaving is not great. You know, it's not something that you would want, but 29 years is an incredible relationship, and, you know, things change. Castrol may have decided that, you know what, we've done all we can do in drag racing. It's time to put our logo someplace else to try another venue. I think John's going to have a whole lot of closet space free up all of a sudden because I don't know that he has anything in a wardrobe that doesn't have that logo on it. But his team has put itself in such a great marketing position. Again, we talked about it a little bit last week with the road show, with all of the various things that he does above and beyond. It won't surprise me at all if he's got funny cars in the Indiana airport again this year when we're flying in, as they did last year. Of course, Schumacher got involved with that as well. but the road show, you know, going to the air show up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin, and going to the Super Bowl, and going to reaching all of these venues outside of the traditional drag racing is something that John Force's team has in place that is obviously going to look like additional exposure and is going to be an added value to any new sponsor that wants to come get on board. John has been very good at servicing his sponsors over the years, and if you don't think that's true, then Castrol wouldn't last there for 29 years. So, you know, something I'm sure will come along. I know that, you know, he's got something in the works or he's talking to people. I don't have any more information than that, but probably by Charlotte we're all going
to
know.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see. As you just mentioned, it's an interesting time in the world, and the most well-known drag racer of all time, who is also the best marketer, who also has maybe the most marketable up-and-coming young driver in Courtney and Brittany, who will be on the show, is out there on the market with their program. And so we will see. We will learn a lot over the next couple of years. One thing I do want to address, even though I don't know why, is some of the negativity out there, Alan, about this. People like, yeah, that's right, good. I don't understand it, and I think it's an example of the worst in humanity.
Well, you know, haters are going to hate. You know, there's always somebody that either, you know, if they don't like John, then they think, okay, well, you know, he deserves this, or the, okay, I'll never buy another product from those people as long as I live because they're pulling out. You know, 29 years they've been supporting John in the sport, and I give them credit for that. You know, nothing lasts forever. So, you know, I didn't quit drinking Budweiser when they quit supporting Kenny Bernstein. So, you know, I'm glad that they were here for so long. They were involved with, you know, you look back to the early days when they had the Castrol Super Team. You know, they had cars literally in every class from the sportsman all the way up. They sponsored a couple of races. They were involved in the sport in a lot of different ways before deciding to focus on, you know, put all their eggs in the John Force basket. But, you know, the deal didn't last 29 years because it was a bad deal. And the deal's just coming to an end because, you know, times change.
Well, exactly. And the change of corporate ownership is really the real reason. You mentioned that Castrol Super Team. I remember when that went down. And Gary Ormsby and Larry Morgan, I believe, was in there. Man, that was so cool to get one of those hero cards with all the cars on there. But as you say, things change, ownership change. People have their own ideas of how they want to do things, and that's that. All right, final question for Alan Reinhardt. Then we're going to let him go. Alan, as we get ready for the U.S. Nationals and countdown, what should hardcore fans be paying attention to? What are the insiders watching? Says Len.
I think one of the things is going to be the spoilers. You know, there are going to be some very good cars that don't make the countdown. Just, you know, simple mathematics. There's more spots, there's more good cars than there are in the countdown. And if you get somebody like, let's take the Coletta Funny cars, for instance. You know, Alexis doesn't look like she's going to make it. Dell is going to have to fight his way if he can get in. Now, hypothetically speaking, if Dell doesn't make it, what's to stop Connie and the whole team from just putting on their mad scientist hat for the last six races and getting after it? And they could certainly go out there and be big-time spoilers. You know, I think some of the guys will change their strategy a little bit once you get into that position, especially if you get off to a good start. You have a good Charlotte. You have a good Dallas. You know, now you almost start racing defensively, and that's going to be something to watch is, you know, I think some of the spoilers can really play a role in the countdown because we're going to have some good top-quality cars that don't care about points anymore, and they got nothing to lose if they just go up swinging for a home run every time.
Absolutely, and before we let you run, I just want your thoughts on Pro Stock Motorcycle. The bikes are back. This is the final race. Andrew Hines outside looking in. Ellie Tonglet outside looking in. Guys on the inside, Sean Gann, Steve Johnson. They look like the ones I would say are vulnerable to Ellie and Andrew trying to bump their way in. What do you think? One race for it all.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see from a performance standpoint who comes out swinging once we get to Indy. I know I've said this a couple of times throughout the course of the year, but I think it still plays in. You realize that the motorcycles haven't run since we were in Sonoma. So that's plenty of time for the Harley guys to go back and see if they really do have it figured out. You know, it sure looked like Eddie's bike was getting closer the last couple of races when they were out. If they have had, you know, if they have used that time productively and have gotten the Harleys back a little bit closer to where that they need to be, then they could really play a role in this as we go on into the countdown, whether Andrew gets in or not. Also, a number of the Buell guys have been kind of kicking around the new style motor that has a different cam chest, a shorter push rod, and it's just like the latest design in in the evolution of the Buell motors. I know a couple of them have been out there running experimentally, but I also know that having a month to sit home in the dyno room, refine that combination, and I'm sure a lot of them have been out at the racetrack trying them in the real world as well. So it'll be interesting to see from a performance standpoint who's really fast at Indy, and we're probably not going to know that until Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning when we get deep into qualifying. You know, you're certainly not going to see it all in the first qualifying session no matter what, but that's what I think a lot of guys are going to be looking at. Are the Harleys back from a performance standpoint on par with the rest of the bikes? Have the Buell guys been able to pick up, and how many of them are going to that new combination now? So that's what I think most of the people are going to be watching.
Very interesting. Alan, great job as usual, and boy, do we have a great show. A final comment, David Rayer, Rayer and Morrison, going to be on the show talking about the ins and outs of Pro Stock. This is something that I've been sitting on for a couple weeks, and I thought we're about to get into playoff mode here. I got to get this out there. And we're going to hear from David Rayer about Pro Stock and his thoughts on all the issues we've discussed over the past couple of weeks.
I'm really looking forward to seeing what David has to say. I've spent a lot of time over the years chit-chatting with him, both at and away from the racetrack. Of course, when I was working with David Nickens on the Pro Stock deal, there were a lot of times when we would end up testing the same place. You know, they were based in Dallas, we were in Houston, and we'd end up going testing at the same track, and we got a lot of opportunity to chit-chat. One of the really, really sharp minds out there as far as engine development, and a guy that's been involved from the days when you literally used to go get blocks and heads out of the junkyard and turn them into Pro Stock engines, up to what he's doing now and the Pro Mod development that he's done with the nitrous motors over the years. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what his insights are in the category, being a guy that has lived it as long as he has. You know, all the race wins, all the championships, and the fact that he's still making a living in the sport, building engines and supplying horsepower. So can't wait to hear.
WFO Radio exclusive as we go inside Pro Stock. Alan, great job. I will see you in a couple of days. We'll be there at the big go. This is it. And boy, do they all matter from here on out.
Well, you travel safely. I'm actually headed that way as we speak. So I'll see you when you get to Indy, and looking forward to a lot of things, not the least of which is that Snake and Mongoose movie.
That, the Traxxas shootout. Are you going to be the guy who reaches in and pulls out the ball?
Yes, I am.
Wow.
It's actually a lotto machine, but it's a matter of pushing the button. So, yeah, I'll be the guy pushing the button.
That is so exciting. See, like, that's one of those life's little bucket list things that the average person just never gets to do. That's
you know
the
what?
Perk right there.
Wait, you know what? The average person is more than welcome. That's open to the fans.
Well,
it's
going to
happen in downtown Indy.
Yeah.
Come on down. We'll have a lot of race cars on display. We'll have a lot of drivers there. All of the Traxxas shootout drivers will be there, both the ones that are locked and the ones that are in the drawing. And it is open to the fans. Monument Circle in downtown Indy, Wednesday afternoon. Come on.
There you go, folks. You got a personal...
Actually, Wednesday at noon. I believe it's scheduled to start right at noon. So stretch your lunch hour and come join us.
There you go, people. You got a personal invite from Alan Reinhart. You go down there, you watch him draw the winning ball, and then you go over to Elmo's and get the shrimp cocktail, and then you spend the rest of the time burning.
There you go. That sounds like a perfect plan to me.
Alan, great job. See you in a couple days.
All right, Joe. Travel safe. We'll talk to you soon.
The NHRA's Alan Reinhart joins us each week right here on WFO Radio. That's right, first-time listeners, you picked the right show and the right time to sign on to WFO Radio. Download the app, subscribe on iTunes, we've got a YouTube channel, just click all over our website and sign up and subscribe to everything we got, because we've got it going for the next couple of weeks, right through the end of the countdown. Now, Alan mentioned the Traxxas shootout results. Go down there tomorrow, Wednesday. You people listening on Wednesday, go down there now. You people listening on Thursday, you missed it. We have a lot of people listening at all different times. I do want you to know WFO Radio will be on location at Lucas Oil Raceway at the U.S. Nationals for the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, and we will be uploading interviews and audio from in the pits, in the media center, in the tower, all kinds of stuff, shows. You're not going to want to miss it. So get ready, download the app, and be ready to be checking back all day Friday and Saturday and Sunday as we bring you behind the scenes at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. Thanks to the folks at Redline Oil, who are once again sending WFO Radio to the big go. Speaking of Traxxas Nitro Shootout results, the voting is in. We will hear from Brittany Force and Clay Milliken, both referencing their campaigns, but the results are actually in, and here are the results. In Funny Car, the winner is Tim Wilkerson with 40%, followed by Robert Height with 32%, Alexis 15%, Dell 5%, Bob Tasca III 3%, Jeff Aren 3%, and Tony Tedragon with 2%. Those are the funny car results, and the lottery balls will be assigned based on those percentages. So Tony Pedregon will have two lottery balls in the ball selector lotto type machine. And Tim Wilkerson will have 40. So you understand how it works. The drawing is at 12:30. Get down there to downtown Indianapolis to experience it. In Top Fuel, the winner. How about us? Really, you know, Joe Costello, the host, has to pat Joe Costello, the producer, on the back. The Top Fuel top vote getters are Brittany Force with 49% and Clay Milliken with 26%. Merely coincidentally, joining us on this show just minutes from now, we will hear from Brittany Force and Clay Milliken. That's just astounding. How plugged in to the sport of NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing we are on WFO Radio. It's sick and twisted how connected we are. Doug Coletta with 8%, David Grubnick with 6%, Morgan Lucas with 6%, and Terry McMillan with 5%. Those are your Traxxas Nitro Shootout results. When we come back, we're going to hear from Brittany Force, who won the voting, but at the time we spoke, she was still up in the air, plus Clay Milliken. On the show, we've got Richard Blake. Are you going to go see the Snake and Mongoose movie? If you are, first of all, you got to go in the first night. It's big. Second of all, you got to hear Richard Blake. It's awesome how into the sport of NHRA drag racing he has become. We'll hear from Richard coming up on the show talking about the Snake and Mongoose movie. And finally, David Rayer, Rayer and Morrison. I've been saying for weeks now, we're going to delve into the world of pro stock. And what we've decided to do is run a series of interviews that will be available on the show and on the website. We're going to hear from David Rayer of Rayer and Morrison Racing Engines, his thoughts on pro stock. What is the issue with the short fields? What can be done to alleviate the situation, if anything? And his general thoughts about the state of the class as we speak. Something that you hardcore insiders are not going to want to miss. And that is exactly what WFO Radio is all about. Now, I do want to remind you, the Carolina Nationals, first race of the countdown. You can get your tickets by clicking ZMAXDragway.com or just going to the front page of WFOradio.com. And they are on board once again with WFO Radio. I will be there. So let's all get together for the first race of the countdown. You can click on that banner ad right on the front page of WFOradio.com and get your tickets for the Carolina Nationals at the Bellagio of Drag Strips, ZMAX Dragway. We'll be back after this with Brittany Force.
This is WFO Radio.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials, known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better, or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. Or visit frankhawley.com.
Get fired up on the WFO line.
WFO, Joe.
954-889-6796.
It's just been an absolute joy to be a drag racing fan.
Go wide open, and your call may be used on the show.
Or preface by saying I'm not a Kurt Busch fan or apologist.
I don't know where Greg Anderson's ego is gone, but I know one person that's going to be a big-time villain in pro stock.
That's 954-889-6796. That phone line is always WFO. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
The Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals this weekend. WFO Radio is going to be there, so be sure to download the WFO Radio app and keep checking back for shows and interviews, because just like this show, you never know who we're going to run into as we walk the grounds of Lucas Oil Raceway. Now, when I think of the U.S. Nationals, I think of the past, the present, and the future, all the different drivers that have raced, that will race, and some of them having their very first shot at the big go. And one of those drivers is Brittany Force, who joins us now. Brittany, welcome back to WFO Radio. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So let's get right into it. First season, Top Fuel, getting ready for the big go and the countdown. What is your thought about your season so far?
You know, I mean, I'm just been so excited. My rookie season at driving the Castrol Edge Top Fuel Dragster, I have a great team behind me. And, you know, we've had our struggles, we've had our ups and downs, but, you know, I'm looking forward to Indy and hoping that we could turn all that around and go some rounds and get a win.
I'm watching you. I'm doing announcing at some of the races, and I'm watching you get out of the car and just thinking about the development and the experience. We watched it with Ashley. We saw it with Courtney. We're now seeing it with you, and thinking how the curve goes and just how you are able to be better because of their experiences almost. It seems like you're evolving rapidly.
Thank you very much. I mean, back when I started I tested all last year in the Top Fuel car. And I mean, going from, I mean, just even the beginning this year at Pomona to where I am now, I just feel so much more comfortable as a driver in the car. And it's just all that experience. When I was testing all last year, you know, I would test one weekend and then I would have 3-4 weeks off. And, you know, being out of the seat for a month, it's like when you'd hop back in it, you're almost starting all over again. So all these races where they're just stacked right in a row and just being out there every single week and jumping in the car, making, you know, as many passes as we can, it's just really helpful. And that's all the experience that, you know, has kind of helped me move forward.
People say that at a point things begin to slow down for the driver.
Yeah.
Can you describe your version of that? Have things slowed down? Are they in the process of slowing down? Was there one week where you got in the car and you realized, I got this? How does that work?
You know, that is really true. Things do slow down in the car. It really started last year during my testing season when I noticed it. It was my first run out ever in a Top Fuel car. I was scared to death, and I only went to 60 feet, and, you know, I slowly worked my way down the track. But, I mean, I remember my first few passes ever, you know, going to 330 feet. They, you know, my crew chiefs would look at me and say, okay, let's just take it to the 330 mark, and then, you know, let's take it to the 500 mark on the track. And, you know, I'd go out, drive down on the track, you know, on a scooter, and find my points where I needed the lift at, and I'd hop in that thing and step on it, and I couldn't tell you if I was at 60 feet or 1,000 foot because it was so fast. And I would hop out on the other end. I talked to my dad. I talked to Robert Height. And I told them, like, I can't spot where I'm at. And they're like, trust me, that's normal. You've only been in a Top Fuel car 3 times. You can't expect to go out there and, you know, and adjust to that right away. And they both said, trust me, in time, you'll be able to spot it. And, you know, after making some passes a few months into my testing season, I could spot exactly where I'm on the track. They tell me to drive to 500 feet, I'll lift right at 500 feet. And it just, it really slows down. It's not, for some reason, it's like your mind kind of adjusts to how fast you're going, and you could just spot where you are. It's crazy, and my dad and Robert told me it would happen, and I didn't believe it, and it really is true.
And this is after having experience in a fuel car, and so those of us who've never been that fast are thinking, wow, is the jump that big from these A-fuel cars, which are incredibly quick and fast, to Top Fuel? So is it?
Yes, the jump from an A-fuel car to a Top Fuel car is definitely, I mean, you definitely feel it. An A-fuel car is pretty dang fast, but the difference I noticed between it is the launch feels a lot harder, but you continue to pull all the way down. You feel this motion of it pulling you all the way down the track that I didn't really get in an A-fuel car. And it's almost, the only way I can explain it is when you step on it and launch, that feeling of launching, you feel that the entire way down the track until you left.
Brittany Force with us here on WFO Radio, getting ready for her first Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals as a top fuel racer. And lots to cover, Brittany. I want to ask you about, of course, you just had a massive campaign at airtime. The campaign voting is closed, but you're trying to make the tracks a shootout on the strength of voting. And, of course, then each driver gets a certain percentage of lottery balls, which will then be spun, and they will pull a ball on Wednesday to determine who makes the tracks a shootout. John Force Racing, always big with the campaign, so I'm sure you got a lot of voting going on.
Oh, yeah. You know, the second we were able to promote that, we started promoting it. My PR team jumped right on that. And, you know, we're just trying to get as many votes as we get. The more votes, you know, the better chance we have of getting in the track to shoot out. And this Castrol Edge team, we want that last final spot. We want a chance to be able to compete in the track to shoot out. And that would just be so awesome. So we're promoting it. We're doing everything we can. And you know, we'll find out in a few days, you know, who gets to race it. So I'm hoping it'll be our team.
Now, what about the new car? Because your dad's been on, we've spoken with you. You started your career in a canopy car in Top Fuel and told us, I guess it was at PBIR or earlier in the year, you're getting used to it, and it seemed like you got used to it. Then all of a sudden, in the name of new chassis and Richard Hogan being on board, using a car he is familiar with and had great success with last year, suddenly you're out of the canopy and in a more conventional car. How was that transition, and what was it like for you? How do you like the new car? And give me a little comparison of the two sensations.
I really like. I feel safe in it. I like having, you know, the closed cockpit around me, and I feel safer as a driver, especially after watching, you know, Anton Brown in Pomona climb out of that horrific crash that he had, and he absolutely believes that that canopy saved his life. So we will definitely get back to the canopy. We had to make some changes. The car that we're running was we've been running all year long with the canopy was 100 pounds overweight. We had too much stuff on it, and we couldn't get it to run and compete with the other drivers. So we went ahead and, you know, bought a new car and didn't have time to get the canopy put on it, and now it's just races, you know, right in a row. We haven't had time to get around to it, but we're hoping right around, you know, within the next few races, I will be back to a car with a canopy on it. It won't be the one I'm driving now. It's one that we're building in Indy at my dad's shop in Indy, and I'm hoping it'll be done soon because I want to get back in that canopy car. I just feel so much safer with it. I mean, it's crazy to go all year long with the, you know, the canopy on it and then take it off. I mean, I feel like I'm out there. I can see the sky. I can see everything. It's loud, and I want to get back to that canopy.
The loudness. I hear that the loudness was one of the big differences.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is louder, but for me, it's just more of a comfort thing. And the funny thing is beginning of the year, when they got me in that canopy car, I did not want to get in that thing. I was worried I was going to be claustrophobic, and I was like, I don't think I could drive this thing, like, all super comp, A-fuel. You know, I've been driving for, you know, years, and I never had a closed cockpit, so I was worried that it was definitely, I was going to feel claustrophobic, but once I made two passes in it, I liked it, and I can't wait to get back into one.
Brittany Force with us here on WFO Radio, vying for the Traxxas shootout with the big fan vote. Of course, getting ready for the U.S. Nationals and the countdown. Now, looking at the points, to be fair, that's probably not going to happen this year, and mathematically probably out, to be fair. But I wouldn't have considered that making the countdown a legitimate goal, considering it is your first year. It is your team's first year. I know it's important to set goals. I'm trying to make a compliment here in that you guys have done exceptionally well. First year is supposed to be a learning curve year, right off year. You've taken out some big drivers. You've had some huge first round matchups that you have won. And now you are the most experienced that you have been with a car that is very quick at a time that you can factor in to this countdown by taking out top competitors. What is your countdown strategy, and more importantly, the Chevy Performance U.S. Nationals?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, that was one of my goals, was to get into the top 10. But unfortunately, you know, we couldn't do that, and it wasn't because of lack of effort from the Castrol Edge team. I mean, these guys have worked their butts off. And, you know, it's simply just, you know, we're trying to get used to a top fuel car. I have Dean Antonelli and Eric Lane that have been tuning this car. And they're funny car guys, you know. And a bunch of the guys that came over from my dad's team, they're funny car guys. So, and having a top fuel car in John Force Racing, it's the first one ever. So it's new to all of us. And it's new to me as a driver. So, I mean, coming in, I set my goals. And, of course, I set them high. But I didn't come in and expect to, you know, achieve every single one because that would almost be impossible. So, you know, we're still going to work our butts off. And we're still going to go for our first win. And that is our plan through the end of the season, is to get our first win ever.
Brittany Force with us here on WFO Radio. Brittany, a flurry of troubling news in the sponsorship world affecting John Force Racing and other teams with Ford, and then, of course, the recent news with Castrol. Obviously, you getting your feet wet first year as a driver, maybe not privy to all that goes on in the boardrooms in terms of sponsorship and all, but from your perspective, a lot of fans... concerns, oh my goodness, John Force and Castrol have been together for as long, last week we mentioned, as long as Spencer Massey had been alive. And so it is a big change. What is your perspective on the situation? And I've heard some people say that maybe it's a positive thing to have the most marketable drag racing family out there working on a new sponsorship deal. This being your first year, you got Castrol Edge on board. Kind of puts a defined timeline on your top fuel career, at least for now. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I know. You know, it's weird. We have been with Castrol for 28 years, and we have the rest of this year and all next year with them. And they have been just an awesome sponsor. You know, they've, you know, really got my dad to where he is today, and all that he's accomplished is because of, so much help because of them. And, you know, they gave me my rookie season. Being able to drive that Castrol Edge car was... it just meant so much to me because that was my dad's main sponsor that he drove for so many years. And now to be able to jump into a car with that same, where we share that same sponsor, that same logo, was just, it meant a lot to me. So, you know, we had some great years, and it's unfortunate that it does have to come to an end, but we have all next year, and the Castrol Edge teams, we're gonna do everything we can. We're gonna try to get into that top 10. We're gonna go for some wins. We're gonna try to qualify at every national event, and we're still gonna, you know, really battle it out. But now those doors have opened. We are looking for new sponsors, and that's what we're going to go after as soon as we can.
Very interesting and heartening to hear that, of course. You know how sometimes fans and even people like myself can hear some news and react emotionally, overreact. I can't imagine being in the middle of it with the all that is going on from race to race with you. What about... stepping out of the anonymity, so to speak, your family really burst on the scene. Of course, we've all known your father is a big personality for years and years. But then you had the TV show, and that's kind of where the average fan got to know you and your sisters very well. And then Ashley and Courtney, and then you jump into the cockpit of the race car and start driving. Now that you're more than two-thirds of the way through your rookie season and the fans have gotten used to you and know you and you've been doing interviews and kind of just lived the life of being on the tour, being an NHRA star, going from city to city, what are your observations of the lifestyle of being out there, of being famous amongst drag racing fans, and what kind of interactions have you had with them, and do you like it?
You know, I love every single part of it, every single second about it, but I think most of that's because I grew up as a kid out on the road with my dad, you know, every as many weekends as we could. Especially in the summers, we'd pack our bags and we'd go from race to race to race. So that, being out at the racetrack is kind of like my second home. It's nothing new to me. I mean, yeah, I am going to quite a bit more races than I did last year. I was testing and I went to a majority of them. There was maybe two or three that I missed. So really, I mean, it's no different than I'm just so used to being out there all the time that I've grown to love it, and I can't imagine, you know, I can't imagine my life without drag racing and being on the road every weekend and being with my family, and it really is one of the best things ever, and the greatest part about it is I do have my family out there, and we're all so supportive of each other, and it's so exciting to stand up on the starting line and watch Courtney and watch my dad, and, you know, every time I pull up there, they're standing right behind me, so it really is great that they're all out there and we could all do something we love together.
We're going to have Richard Blake from the Snake and Mongoose movie. He's the actor who plays the mongoose on the show. And Richard is telling us about how blown away he is about the whole subculture. And as someone who has grown up in it and around it, and even me, someone who was always a fan, we don't even realize how many people have never even seen, heard, or appreciated what it is that we do. And I think it's very interesting to get your perspective as someone who has lived it and yet is still very young and new and fresh at this world, what you think about getting the sport out to new people, people your age, exposing people. They say kids now, and I hate to say it because I'm just 40, but I'm saying kids these days. Oh, how terrible. But maybe they don't even want to get their driver's license, Brittany. And how do we get them interested in drag racing? So let me ask you, as you live this life and as you devote and invest parts of your life in this sport, what do you think about its future prospects and ways to improve it?
You know, that's what we're trying to do in this sport, is really trying to build it, pull in more fans from, you know, all over. And that's one thing I did notice. When we did our show back in 2006, 2007, we had a lot more kids and girls that would come up to the ropes that would want to meet my sisters and I. And they would tell us, my husband or my brother has been watching drag racing for years, and they tried to get me out, and I never came. But when I saw you on your TV show, we all had to come out and watch. So that's really what we're trying to do. It's pulling, you know, more crowds that, you know, really aren't aware of it. I mean, you can watch it on TV and it's awesome, but there's nothing like being out there and sitting up in the bleachers. And when you see those cars launch, you could just feel it everywhere. It's just all your senses are heightened. And it really is something you've got to get out there and check out, because it is so much fun. I mean, I've had some of my friends come out and check out races in Pomona and Las Vegas, and they all told me, I can't believe it's that loud. I can't believe they go that fast. And they are just blown away, and then they are hooked. So that's what we're trying to do. And my dad's in right now talking about doing another TV show, where I'm hoping if we do go down that road, it will pull more fans into, you know, NHRA and the sport of drag racing.
I think it certainly worked the first time around, and we all understand why it came to an end. But it's just amazing, and how the mainstream mass media can work. Now, one final question for you as you get ready for your first big go. Your sister Courtney, legitimate championship title shot. Of course, your dad in there as well. Robert in there as well. But I have a feeling that I know who you're pulling for.
You know what? I would love to see Courtney, you know, go for that and earn a championship. But she's still so new. It's only her second year, but I know her team, and they are definitely capable of it. They have kicked some serious butt this year, and it would be awesome to see her out in her second year driving her Traxxas Ford Mustang and see her go for, you know, the championship. And that is exactly what she's going to do. I know the type of person she is. She's very competitive. She's just like my dad. I watch them every weekend after a race. They bicker back and forth. Oh, yeah? Well, I'm higher in the points than you now. And they just go back and forth, teasing each other about who's higher in the points, how many points they are above each other. And she's super competitive, just like my dad. So I know that team is going to go after it.
Wow, you get to avoid some of that, being in the fuel car. And at the same time, you are the quickest and fastest of all the forces. That's got to be a benefit.
Yep, that's pretty exciting, you know, to be the quickest force. It is pretty exciting. And my 379, that's still my best CT. I ran it in qualifying, so I still want to improve on that and actually be at a national event. But, You know, like I said earlier, my dad is out there, my sister, and we all support each other. So it's unfortunate I can't run against them. I would love to. It would be so exciting. But we're in different categories. So who knows? Maybe my dad will come over to a top fuel car one of these days, and I'll be able to race him and hopefully kick his butt out on the track.
That idea was floated a little bit earlier in the year, and it got a lot of people thinking. John mentioned Don the Snake and Kenny Bernstein and a lot of drivers who at the near the end of their career made the switch to top fuel. That would be, I don't know how I would react to that, though. Can you imagine your dad in a top fuel car, in a long skinny car?
You know, I couldn't imagine it. He's just throwing it all out there, because right now we're shopping for sponsors, and whatever we can to keep us all moving forward and driving. He still wants to drive. I want to drive. And however it works to keep us moving forward, he will do. But I can't imagine him in a top fuel car. He's been driving a funny car his entire life. It would be crazy to think about him going down the track in a top fuel car. I'm sure he would steer the heck out of that thing and end up crossing over the center line or who knows what. But he's a funny car guy, and I think that's still what he still wants to go for.
Are you going to go see the Snake and Mongoose movie?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. I can't wait. It's going to be exciting.
Absolutely, absolutely. An era that affected so many of us. Brittany, thank you so much for spending some time with us and the WFO radio audience here on the show. Looking forward to the
thank
Chevy
you.
Performance U.S. Nationals and watching you out there. And like I said, I mean this absolutely truthfully. Every time you go down the track, when you pop out of the car at the top end, I can see you're kind of replaying and thinking about things. And this year is just such a building year. It's going to be very exciting to see you come out of the box at the Winter Nationals in a couple months and run a full season with 1 year under your belt. And I'm pretty sure you're going to get a win under your belt real soon.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Brittany Force with us here on WFO Radio. And when we spoke with Brittany, she wasn't quite sure, but now we know she has the largest percentage of balls in the hopper, the hoppa, for the drawing to be in the Traxxas Nitro Shootout with 49%. How about Brittany, the way she is carrying herself as a young driver in a tumultuous time in terms of sponsorship, her family, Ford, Castrol, all of these different things, and she is just handling herself exceptionally, exceptionally well. Very interesting to see, and a lot to be learned, I think, from these young ladies, Courtney and Brittany, in that, what is it that you do, whatever your profession is? Are you a young person trying to get into a world and compete in a world that you are fresh and new at, and what will it be like to get into the fight, so to speak? We saw Ashley do it, we saw Courtney do it, we saw Brittany do it, and the way they've handled it and the experience that they're gaining along the way is just spectacular. You can go back into the archives on WFOradio.com and hear Brittany's first interviews, and just repetition, seat time, practice, talking with experienced people, surrounding yourself with good people. That's what's going to make you successful, and that is not specific to racing. That is specific to life. And so what is it that you want to do? Do you want to be a great landscape artist? Do you want to be an architect? Do you want to build engines? What do you want to do? Those are the rules, and we see it played out before us with a lot of young drivers. The experience, the repetition, the practice, surrounding yourself with good quality people that you can learn from, and we're watching it happen with the Force Girls. Brittany, great job here on WFO Radio. All right, when we come back, we're going to delve into the world of the Snake and Mongoose movie. Richard Blake is going to join us, the actor who plays Tom the Mongoose McEwen. This is a huge get for the WFO Radio show because, in my opinion, this is just off the top of my head kind of what I feel about this, but 9 out of 10 times my feelings are absolutely correct, and I have proven to be very, very accurate in my statements like this. This is going to become a classic film. Not just a classic drag racing film, but a classic sporting film. Heart Like a Wheel is really the benchmark for drag racing movies, and many people in the sporting arena still love that as a racing movie. One of the best racing movies. I think Snake and Mongoose will surpass it. Because of the characters, because of the racing footage, because of the technology, and the passion of everybody that has basically devoted their lives to it. You want to meet the Mongoose? You want to know what this kid is all about? Stick around. Then later on in the show, we're going to talk social media with the number 2 vote getter in the Traxxas Nitro Shootout. Got 26% of the vote. Clay Milliken going to be on the show. And, oh, by the way, runner-up in Brainerd, Chicago, Gainesville, knocking on the door of his first win. And wouldn't he love to get it at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals? And then later on in the show, you pro stock fans, this is an interview you're not going to want to miss. It's a WFO Radio exclusive. David Rayer, Rayer and Morrison, on the subject of pro stock affordability, pro stock the future of. David Rayer goes into it. I ask questions. He provides answers, and we delve into it. It is an absolute WFO Radio exclusive, and you are going to love it. Stick around. But first, I want to tell you about the folks at Redline Oil. We'll be going to the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, courtesy of the folks at Redline Oil. They are our presenting sponsor for our broadcast. And let me tell you, whether it be synthetic motor oil or products like Water Wetter, they've got something that can help out your car. And not just your drag race car. That's something that's a bit of a misnomer. We did a show called Redline Oil Radio a while back, and if you've got a BMW, if you've got an M, if you've got whatever your street car is, it can actually benefit greatly from Redline Motor Oil and Gear Oil. This is stuff you need to check out. You can go to the website, redlineoil.com, click the banner ad on the front page of our site, and learn more. But we'll be at the U.S. Nationals, thanks to Redline Oil. Check them out when we return. Richard Blake, a.k.a. Tom the Mongoose McEwen from the Snake and Mongoose movie. Stick around.
This is WFO Radio. Get ready for takeoff, race fans. The NHRA Carolina Nationals are back at ZMAX Dragway September 13 through 15. There's no speed limit in drag racing, so these road rockets blister ZMAX Dragway at 330 miles per hour. Watch Sean Force, Antoine Brown, and Courtney Force push the outer limits of speed only at ZMAX Dragway. Kids are free and every ticket is a pit pass. Call 1-800-455-FANS. The NHRA Carolina Nationals at ZMAX Dragway.
Come rock out at the Totally Supercharged 80s Party benefiting the Daryl Gwynn Foundation. Hosted by yours truly, Rock With You Entertainment. Break out the big hair, leg warmers, and power suits, and come join us for dinner, drinks, and an 80s themed night of music and entertainment on September 20th at Passions Nightclub at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Tickets can be purchased by visiting DarylGwynnFoundation.org. Like, it'll be righteous and totally supports a good cause. Presented by the DMR Corporation, Settner Buyer Family Foundation, and WFORadio.com.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
Android. WFO Radio is now available on Android.
You know, I get goosebumps just thinking of what you're saying.
You get the same award-winning motorsports entertainment that iPhone users have downloaded over 25,000 times.
You know, sometimes you just gotta pinch yourself.
They couldn't make this happen.
Ignition. NHRA Nitro. NASCAR coverage. Videos. Push notifications. The WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party Pick Show and more.
It's a whole different game.
The WFO Radio app is a must for any racing fan. The ultimate racing show. Sports radio for racing fans. It's in your pocket right now.
I'm going to scream.
Search WFO Radio and download it now.
I like it. It's exciting for me, and I know it's exciting for the fans.
Download it now. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Getting ready for the big go, the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals here on WFO Radio. And we've got so many different things kind of all converging at once. Of course, the U.S. Nationals and the countdown to follow, but also the premieres of the Snake and Mongoose movie. We had Robin Broidy on a few weeks ago, and as we get closer to the big premieres happening, there's one in Hollywood this week, or there was one in Hollywood this week. There's one in Indy this Friday or this Thursday. Big things happening, and so why not talk to one of the stars joining us now? He plays Tom the Mongoose McEwen. Joining us now, Richard Blake. Richard, welcome to WFO.
Hi, good to hear you, Joe. Good to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show. Are you aware of what a big deal this movie is for drag racing fans? I mean, maybe you know now, but did you know when you first got involved?
When I first got involved, absolutely not. I really didn't. The only thing I really knew was that there wasn't many, if any, drag racing films. So the only one that I, in my research, discovered was Heart Like a Wheel, that I would actually call a film. You know, there's lots of documentaries and stuff out there, but there really wasn't a story told about an individual in this arena of sports. And so I knew that it would be special, you know, to fans just so they could, have their due diligence, in their sport. But I didn't realize what a following Snake and Mongoose still actually has even to this day.
You mentioned Heart Like a Wheel. It came out so many years ago. I was just a kid. Bo Bridges, Bonnie Bedelia, but as a drag racing fan, it was kind of a validation to see that story go up on the big screen with
sure.
the technology that has evolved, even though you're shooting the same period, the same era. I'm sure it's going to pop so much more, and that's very exciting to me.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. What's cool about this, you know, particular film is there's so much actual footage of these guys. And, you know, back in the day, and not even of the guys in particular, but more so of the races, and back when Heart Like a Wheel was made, they didn't necessarily have the capability to take any nostalgic piece of footage and kind of blend it. You know, the things they can do nowadays are just incredible. So to be honest, when I first heard, you know, that Rhino Films and Entertainment Universe they were going to do that, they were going to use, you know, archival racing footage and try to blend it with the stuff that directors shot on set, you know, me and a few of the other cast members, we thought it was cool, but we also weren't sure how it would look. And, you know, and I think it's come out pretty cool. It actually adds this authenticity is the word I would use to the film it just makes it all the more real, you know, especially as you get through the film. I mean, when you first start watching it, you know, your brain, you start to accept it, that you realize, like, wait a minute, everything I'm seeing actually did happen, you know, that way. And that's pretty special.
Richard Blake, joining us here on WFO Radio, plays Tom the Mongoose McEwen in the Snake and Mongoose movie. You've also seen him on episodes of CSI as well as NCIS, and it's just such a big deal, this film coming to Hollywood, and the friction slash working together of Snake and Mongoose, you playing Tom, who is the ultimate marketer, who basically brought the concept of corporate sponsorship and brand marketing to motorsports with this. Tell me about your research with Mongoose and getting together with him and hearing some of his real stories. I'm sure many of them made the film and some perhaps not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Tom is a really, really special person. Really big heart, very, very smart. Always, you know, still to this day an innovator. And, you know, as an actor, I've done lots of TV and a few other films, none of which I had the chance to play the central character or one of the central characters. And this, the fact that he's a real person and he's still alive is just awesome. You know, as an actor, to be able to sit and have a conversation with somebody that you're going to be, you know, portraying. And as much as it is, a privilege to have that or an advantage to have that, it also brings about kind of a little more anxiety than normal, a little more pressure, because you got to get it right. You know, the guy that you're playing is sitting over there in a chair watching you. But he was fantastic. I would, before the film actually started shooting, when we really had a start date set and I was locked in, I would, he lives in Long Beach, not too far from LA. So every week I would drive down once or twice, and I would actually take the script with me, and he would drive me around to actual locations in the script, and we would go over a scene, and he would describe to me how it happened, and he would describe to me where he was standing, what he was wearing, what he said, who won that day, why they were there, all those kinds of things. And so I was taking notes, and I would record it, and I mean, as an actor, it's just invaluable tools to have, to bring truth to everything. And then I will also say this, there's a lot of drama in this story. There's a lot of drama between Tom McEwen and Dom Perdomo, as there was in real life and still is. And there is a lot of drama between the wives and the girls and the children and the whole deal. So it's more, the racing is really the backdrop for who these people were and the situations they were in everyday life. And he was very gracious in allowing me to bring to the drama or the life whatever I felt necessary in that moment. And I'll touch on this real quick if I can. I think in some ways, in utmost respect to him, there were a lot of things in his life that were very tragic. And this movie goes right into him. And, you know, to kind of watch the past tragedy of your life unfold before you, that's something very, you know, very few of us will ever really didn't get to experience. And I think that it was very big of him to do that and be present for that and allow that, and possibly even therapeutic for him to kind of come to terms with those things and face them with me and discover what's the best way we can tell this story and make people really understand how deep it goes. And so, I could tell you a lot of different things we did, but those were some of the things I think are most important to say.
As of interview time to the audience, you are on your way to the Hollywood premiere. What has been the response you get among your peers when you discuss the projects you're working on, and maybe what is the scuttlebutt about this project? Because California is such a big place, it seems like the car culture permeates everything. Jay Leno, for instance, with his huge car collection, and the weather, it just makes it perfect for hot rods and cars. And obviously Pomona being the home of the Winter Nationals and the Auto Club Finals, where the NHRA starts and ends its season. What are people saying to you? Like, hey, you're in this drag racing movie. What kind of feedback are you getting from your working peers?
I mean, a lot of them, the drag racing, like I said, is one thing. A lot of my peers, especially actors, or even I would say directors and producers, they respond to the fact that it's a true story, and that both these guys are alive. And you know, I've had a much bigger response, and I would say from non-car fans, and car fans alike, but not fan, people who aren't as into drag racing as others. They respond to the corporate sponsorship and the Hot Wheels, and basically, you know, where the U.S. Nationals, you know, became this huge event. And you know, I'm actually going to Indianapolis this next week to be present for that and kind of host that with Dom Perlman and be around that. And they're fascinated by what these two guys did, essentially, who were competitors and decided to, you know, join forces, so to speak, to make some money. And I think it blew up way beyond what they, you know, expected it to be, which often is the case in life. As far as drag racing goes, you know, people who are gearheads and who love cars, I have not really yet met one person who, if they know who these guys are, or if they're into drag racing, they absolutely know who Dom Perlman is and who Tom McCune is. They know Snakey Mongoose, and they're like begging for tickets, asking for where can they see it. You know, they're very excited about it because it's really the history of is the evolution of the sport. You know, the movie really kind of shows, it takes you through, you know, through the early 1960s all the way through the 70s. What it's grown to now is just unbelievable.
It absolutely is, and one of the reasons we are so eaten up by the sport, having grown up with it. Richard Blake with us here on WFO Radio plays Tom the Mongoose McCune. So you will be in Indy this week. We will be in Indy as well, so we'll be sure to see you there. During part of this process, have you gotten to take in some current NHRA Mellow Yellow Series action and see what it's all about?
I have a little bit. Not so much this year as much as last year. Last year I was able to actually go to the Winter Nationals. I went with Tom, and you know, stood right next to the cars. And
how cool is that?
Oh my goodness! I kind of got, you know, it's really funny because I kind of got this insight into this world and into this culture that I've discovered. You know, people will just, they would just do anything to be standing where I was standing. And for me, it was work. You know, for me, I was researching the way that I felt, the smell, the rumble. You know, Jesse Williams, who plays Dom Perlman, he described it beautifully. He described that you can actually feel it before you hear it. You know, you can actually feel it on your skin before you hear it when you're around a dragster. So, I experienced that as well. He's also said there's just nothing like it. I agree with that. There's nothing else I've experienced where there's that much power right in front of you. And now when I can watch it on TV, you know, I've become friends with Ron Capps and Alexis DeJorio, and so I'll communicate with them here and there, and I love to watch their races and keep up with it. And I'm very excited to go to India. I think, you know, it's definitely making a fan out of me. I definitely am starting to recognize, you know, cars and brand names and drivers. And it's really cool because they are coming up to me, you know, saying, like, oh, my gosh, you play Tom McEwen. He's such an inspiration. He started this. And what a cool thing to see. And it is, it's been the last 2 years, the full process, it's been discovery for me. Your first question was about, did I realize how many people really love this? And, you know, I did it, and now I do. And I had the opportunity to be in Michigan last week for a premiere of it there. And when Tom Perdomo pulls those haulers up, and you got the real haulers that are in the movie, you know, the red and yellow Snake Mongoose cars, and you got the cast members there, and, I mean, there was a line out the door to see the movie just because people just wanted to be around it. And that's very exciting.
Oh, we are definitely planning to go in all of our cities. I speak for the WFO audience as one we, by the way. We are going
sure.
to see the movie the first night
yeah,
is open. We know that
I
that means
that.
More theaters.
Yeah, it does. That's exactly right. You know, it's an independent film. I want to remind, you know, people that it's not a big studio film. It's not Transformers. It's not CGI. But you know what? That's what I like about it. And I think that's an also general response I've gotten from people. This is a piece that is really true form, and it really depends on the storytelling. It really depends on the characters and their arcs as characters, and it really grabs onto you. I gotta say, even though I know what's gonna happen, you know, every time I've seen it, and the story kind of just sucks you in, and you find yourself kind of rooting for one of the other guys, and what a fun thing, and it's. Yeah, there's not all these crazy special effects, you know, where you don't necessarily know where you are and you don't have any sense of geography, but you're in the story. And I think movies like that, they tend to last a little longer. They tend to be unforgettable. So I hope this one does it. I hope people really like it.
Well, if the passion of the people who have worked on the film is any indication, it is going to stand the test of time. And I am so looking forward to seeing it as soon as possible. And, Richard, I think you're going to find that you are going to have a core of fans that stick with you through whatever your next projects are. Now, let's take a second to talk about that. Obviously, you're going to be Tom the Mongoose McEwen for the rest of your life at some point. But
right.
I hear you've been considered, you were considered for Captain America, Superman. You are like right on the edge of maybe being that big blockbuster Transformer type actor. And this being one of the things that was you were involved with in route to that. What are your aspirations? What do you want to do next? What are you thinking about? And what can we look forward to seeing you in after we go see Snake and Mongoose?
Yeah, man. I mean, there's a couple things I'm up for right now. I can't really speak about. I can say they're both TV things. You know, I have discovered through this process, you know, I love film. A lot of actors now, they say, you know, TV's where you make your money and you create a character and you stay on the episode, and if the show gets picked up, you know, then you're going to continue working. And I get that, and it's very logical. But I got to tell you, there's something really special to me about playing a character in a film. And you know, when you watch a film, the story from the beginning to the end is complete, you know. Unless George Lucas writes it, then there's going to be 25 more of them. But you know, if you're in one story, you're going to go through the story, and at the end of the story, you're going to have satisfaction. So like I love movies like that are about characters, and Snake and Mongoose is that. So I hope to continue in that vein. And you know, as an actor, there's a before and after point I think you hit, and when you get to that point, and in the after side of it, you can kind of pick whatever you want to do, and you have a little more power, a little more control. And when you're on the before side of that mark, you kind of got to evaluate what comes your way, and what do you want to do? Because you're not gonna, you know, there's a lot of competition on that, all that kind of stuff. So right now, I'm very open. I'm hoping this movie, I think, is going to open some more doors for me, and. In more of a way, I think I'll be taken a little more seriously. You know, Captain America, Superman, those kinds of things. Thor actually was one of the first ones I went out for and tested for that. And those are awesome movies, and those are great movies. This is very different. You know, Snake and Mongoose, this is a departure from that leading man, you know, muscular, in shape, chiseled guy. This is a different thing. It's a little deeper. I would liken this film to films most recently, probably Argo, The Fighter. If anyone's seen The Fighter, I really love that. It's a great comparison. You know, where it's a character study of true life people. So I hope to do more stuff like that, because that to me is just, everyone's got a story to tell, and this is an opportunity to share in doing that. And, you know, Transformers would be awesome. I probably would not turn that down. So it's a matter of right now. It's like who sees it and kind of what comes up, you know. I'm very open right now. But yeah, my aspirations are the sky's the limit. I would say quality stuff. I want to do stuff that people recognize the work. They recognize there's a deep character work in there, because I really fell in love with becoming Tom. And I hope people will see that. It's a departure from me. Tom's a character, and he still is a character. He's got a very specific walk, specific talk, you know, nasally voice, his, you know, mannerisms, especially as you kind of get older. He's got quite an arc in this film, so
This sport is just full of characters. It's crazy. At the end of every race, Richard, I'm like, man, they could make a movie out of that. And, of course, that's cliche, but this is one aspect that is true, and I'm so glad you guys worked on it. Now, one final point, because I know you're busy. You're running off to a Hollywood premiere and all. But our listeners and NHRA and drag racing fans in general really respect hard work, work ethic, that kind of stuff, getting your hands dirty, literally. And me doing this online radio show, I noticed that you ran a local television station while you were in high school. How did you manage that?
You said the word, you know, earlier. It's just passion, man. I always say real quickly, when I was very young, my parents would really only allow me to watch Disney films. So I was always watching cartoons. And so in my young brain, I equated, you know, movies to that. That was movies. And I even wrote a letter to Michael Eisner at Disney at the time, you know, sending them my drawings and sent him a little pack of Smarties. I was like, I want to animate movies with you. You know, I didn't know. And then I stayed home sick one day from school, and I saw Back to the Future on TV, and I had seen that already. And I remember asking my parents, you know, why are they doing this again? You know, like what, I don't know what I thought in my brain. I probably must have been 9 or 10. I don't know if I thought they were, like, in a room next door or, like, what was going on, but I was just, like, I didn't understand it because, you know, what is this? And so they explained to me, oh, well, these are actors, and this is a story, and then a light bulb kind of went on for me at that age, and I started making films with everything, with Legos, with my brother and sister. I'd be, you know, making them do 8 takes to get it right, and then when I got to high school, there was a video production class. And I was definitely an athlete. You know, I was a runner. I played basketball. I love basketball. But my passions shifted from sports. I remember actually thinking one day, would I rather play basketball or would I rather make a movie about a great basketball player? And I was just like, oh, man, the movie is just so cool, because it's just, I loved Hoosiers at that time. My dad loved that film. So I just basically started making a bargain with all my teachers in high school. We would have, you know, junior and senior year, we have finals, and my final would be, for instance, in econ or in sociology or whatever classes were, I would make a film instead of taking the final test. And I don't know how I got away with that, but they would allow me, and then I became very popular because they would allow me to choose one other student to help me. And they'd say, you know, whoever's going to partner with Richard, you guys, you'll make the class film, and then everyone else has to take, you know, the 100-question test. I don't know if they saw that the films were good. You know, I don't know if I'm allowed to say that about myself, but I do know that, you know, they gave me access. I was a sophomore in high school. Who knows what I could have put over TV, but I think there was a trust element there. I was in Wisconsin doing this, and I would make little spoofs of everything. You know, I would just spoof James Bond and Mission Impossible and Speed, you know, with Keanu Reeves, and do the voice and be like, hey, man, you know, bomb, like, I would do all this fun stuff, and people would laugh and have fun, and my friends would laugh and think I was so funny, and I think I was trying to be serious. So I was dead serious, making, like, the most serious action pictures you could make as a sophomore in high school, and all my friends would be like, oh, man, we love that comedy, you're making fun of it. So I kind of just was like, yeah, well, I learned then, you know, you can't really choose how your audience reacts. You just got to let them enjoy it. And man, I did that for 3 years straight before I left out of high school. And yeah, I'll never forget that, especially my senior year because I'd already done it. So it was almost just protocol that every class I was in, Richard's going to make the film at the end of the semester, you know, and everybody wanted to be my partner. And it was just, that was really fun. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about production doing that behind the scenes because I was really doing everything. I think that has helped me a lot as an actor. I know all the things that go into it, and obviously that's a very small scale compared to being in Hollywood.
And let me tell you, a great story and great advice for a lot of our young listeners out there about working hard, being passionate, and even a little of the classroom/office politics that goes on. Richard, great story, and I'm really glad that I asked it. I wish you the best of luck, and we're coming to Indy as well with WFO Radio, so our paths will cross, knowing the landscape a little bit. I'd love to get together with you there as you experience the big go, because this really is the Daytona 500, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Finals for drag racing. It is the biggest, the best that we got, and it's going to be great to have you there. And I wish you such luck with Snake and Mongoose. I hope it turns into something special. And it's all if the audience goes on the first night, folks. You got to get out there the first night to your local theater.
Yeah, fill those theaters, because that's going to dictate, you know, a distributor stepping in and putting it everywhere. That's really, and also word of mouth, I think, spreads, you know, when so far in the places people have seen it, they really like it. And I think that's the most powerful thing, is just word of mouth. If somebody next to you says, wow, they really love that, or it really moved them, or they really learned something, then you don't need to watch a trailer or see a review. You're just going to go see it because you want to see what they're talking about. Tell your friends, and if you love cars, I mean, you'll be drooling the whole movie.
I have a feeling we are very excited about it. Richard, thank you so much. Now, do you want our audience following you on Twitter? If so, give your handle.
Yeah, heck yeah. It's Richard W. Blake. So it's at Richard W. Blake. If you do follow that, I can definitely, I'm on Instagram as well, and I usually link them, and I got a lot of photos of the movie up there, a lot of behind the scenes pictures and photos that every once in a while I will I'll tweet or connect you guys to. And tonight I'll be going to the premiere, and there'll be a lot of photos and probably some interviews there that I can send links, post links to those, and you can kind of track where the movie goes as it goes across the country.
That is awesome. And the world of social media, just incredible, the things that can be done. We're encouraging, obviously, our audience to get connected just because of the drivers. You can go into the pits without even being at the race, but now you can be at a Hollywood premiere for the movie of the year, Snake and Mongoose. Richard, thank you so much. It's been great speaking with you, and I look forward to seeing you in Indy.
Likewise, Joe. I can't wait to see you there.
Richard Blake with us here on WFO Radio, plays Tom the Mongoose McEwen in the Snake and Mongoose movie, and just a great kid, call him a kid, right? Great kid playing a drag racing legend. And frankly, the appreciation for our sport, for the whole everybody who is working on this film, I cannot wait to see it. He was going to the premiere. The premiere has since happened, and the reviews are unreal. Everybody is saying that it's a total home run, that they absolutely loved the film. And cameos by drivers you know, like Ron Capps, for instance, is in there. And from what I understand, Capps is in makeup, and we might not recognize him. So it's going to be very interesting to see that. Ron Capps, by the way, who is searching for his 500th career round win this weekend. He's just got to win one round. He's got like 499. And Capps has got 500 round wins. That is huge, absolutely huge. But the Snake and Mongoose movie, first of all, follow Richard on Twitter. That's very important. But also, we talk about corporate sponsorship and supporting your driver by supporting their corporate sponsor. We're seeing it with so many different avenues in the drag racing world right now. It's more important than ever for fans to support the sport that they love if they want to see it grow. There are boardrooms and marketing rooms with pie charts and graphs and Excel spreadsheets spread out on the table. And whether or not you swing by a Circle K and get a big drink, because Tim Wilkerson had Circle K on the side of his funny car last week, or you go and see the Snake and Mongoose movie, I can't think of a better way to promote the sport of drag racing than for this independent film to become something, to be in more theaters, to get out to the mainstream, to show the young people, hey, you know those toys you played with? Yes? Well, this is the story behind it, like me. And it's so true that I am the market. That's maybe why I'm pushing it so extremely hard, because I was the kid. I was born in the early 70s. I lived this experience. And at the time, I think you could choose either, but really it was Snake and Mongoose Hot Wheels or Evel Knievel, right? Wasn't that the toys, the marketing? And everyone had the Evel Knievel that you pulled the thing and you sent the motorcycle going, it would pop the wheelie and then crash. Everybody had that, but everybody also had the Snake and Mongoose. I had the Army funny car, and right now, right here, I have the Pepsi Challenger funny car in absolutely perfect mint condition. Like, you can't be more mint condition than my Hot Wheels Pepsi Challenger yellow Don the Snake Prudhomme funny car. It's just not possible. Can't, unless it was in the package, which it is not. But this is a non-played with toy. Perfect! It's like I'm trying to sell it, right, on eBay? No. I'm not selling it. You gotta go the first week. Gotta go the first night. You gotta get on the internet and find out who's showing the movie, and you gotta show up, and you gotta show up with force, with your gear, and represent. And the movie will be distributed more greatly because of it. Thanks to Richard Blake for coming on the show. And he will be in Indy, as will we. And remember, we're going to do things a little differently this time from Indy. In the past, we would compile like a 3-hour show and then post it at the end of the day, which has been great, except a lot of the fans haven't had the time at the end of the day to listen to the 3-hour show. So what I think we're going to be doing this time is posting shorter clips of what's going on more rapidly. So here's what we need you to do. Download the app and bookmark WFOradio.com, because we're going to be at the Big Go and we're going to be posting all kinds of behind the scenes audio and clips in short form so that you can consume it very rapidly. This is a strategic change, a change in strategy that I have instituted, and we're going to see how it works. And of course, we're going courtesy of the folks at Redline Oil. I want to remind you, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School, if you're tired about hearing of all these drivers and how much fun they're having and you want to try it, check out Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. They have been big supporters of WFO Radio. And if you're looking for the perfect Christmas gift, if you're looking for them to come to you, they've got some great schools. They're traveling around the country, and they're coming to an area near you. Check out frankhawley.com. That's frankhawley.com for more information, whether you want to ride along, whether you want to do a super comp course, whether you want to learn to drive an alcohol funny car, whether you want to become a champion and learn at least the ways of the champion, check out frankhawley.com, because they definitely have some great programs. Just ask Jack Beckman. He's a pretty good representative. We'll be back after this with Clay Milliken, runner-up of the most recent race in Brainerd and knocking on the door of victory. Clay Milliken, when we return, right here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in
and Redline Motor Oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials. Known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Get ready for takeoff, race fans. The NHRA Carolina Nationals are back at ZMAX Dragway September 13 through 15. There's no speed limit in drag racing, so these road rockets blister ZMAX Dragway at 330 miles per hour. Watch Sean Force, Antoine Brown, and Courtney Force push the outer limits of speed only at ZMAX Dragway. Kids are free and every ticket is a pit pass. Call 1-800-455-FANS. The NHRA Carolina Nationals at ZMAX Dragway.
Hey, this is Carlos, WFO radio producer. When you're done watching all the great videos, which I made, on the WFO Radio TV YouTube channel, head over to the WFOradio.com store for some really hot WFO radio gear. Like the WFO radio hat, which is now only $15. WFO New Era hats are on sale. Get a hat for your dad, get a hat for your head, or a sticker kit for your truck. WFO radio gear is on sale at WFOradio.com. Gets up.
Hey, this is Joe Costello, and we'll be back to the show in a second. But first, I want to tell you about CompetitionPlus.com. There's a reason CompetitionPlus.com is the leader among drag racing electronic magazines. Their trained staff is always on alert and always asking the tough questions. The end result is hard-hitting drag racing journalism with up-to-the-minute reporting. For over a decade, CompetitionPlus.com has been a pioneer as drag racing's go-to source for the latest in news, race coverage, and high-quality photography. Their trained staff thrives on getting the inside stories, and their columnists study their topics before they hit their first keystroke. When it comes to covering the races, they leave you feeling as if you've actually been to the race. CompetitionPlus.com is an honest-to-goodness, free drag racing magazine, published by the most passionate of drag racing fans, who just happen to be journalists. Don't wonder what's going on in the drag racing world. Be in the know daily. Log on to CompetitionPlus.com.
Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
The Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals this week, and WFO Radio is running wild. This is the big one, the granddaddy of all drag races, and why not have the granddaddy of all drag racing shows cover it? Now, this past week, I had a lot of people reach out to me on Twitter, on Facebook, on email, and say, you got to get Clay Milliken on this show. Clay is ready to break out. It's about to happen right before the U.S. Nationals. And, well, why not? Here he is, Clay Milliken. Clay, welcome back to WFO.
Man, thank you. Always love coming on WFO. We always have a good time, Joe. And you know what? I am excited for headed to the big go, the U.S. Nationals, the Daytona 500, the Super Bowl, you know, the NBA Finals, the World Series of drag racing. I mean, it's everything and all rolled into one big race. I mean, man, oh man, that place is going to be rocking this week.
Absolutely is, and I love all the analogies that to other fans to make them understand how big a deal this is. And some in the drag racing community would say, well, why reference those other sports? But to a mainstream fan who maybe doesn't know exactly what the U.S. Nationals is, that's the way to get to them.
It is. I mean, you know, in NASCAR terms, you know, their biggest race of the year is Daytona, and, you know, it's just the beginning of the season, and yet it has got so much importance put on that race. Well, for us as drag racers, the U.S. Nationals is that same kind of thing, but it has a huge importance, especially for the folks in the bottom half of the top ten that are fighting for a spot to get into that countdown. So, I mean, it's got not only all the tradition, but it's got a lot hanging on it for a lot of drivers that are trying to get themselves locked into this countdown. So, I mean, that adds a lot of importance, along with the prestige of being the U.S. Nationals.
And I see that fireworks are back on Friday night, which is kind of a subplot, but I like it.
Oh, I love fireworks. I love fireworks. You know, it's something cool for the fans, and I'll tell you, it's awesome. Especially if you're the last pair down the racetrack Friday night and those fireworks start going off right behind you. It is just cool. It gives you goosebumps, makes the hair raise up on your arms, and you know that you're there at the big go.
All right, let's get into it, Clay. You mentioned the schedule and the importance of this race just on multiple levels. I think there are a lot of drivers that if they could walk out of the end of a season and say, well, I won nothing else other than the Chevy Performance U.S. Nationals, that season would be considered a success because you go into the record books and the history books of NHRA, but it also happens to be the final race before the countdown, which you have already clinched. Now, comparing this year to last year, that has got to be just if you're checking off boxes on the success side of your whatever you guys got in the shop there, that's got to be a big one checked off.
Oh, I mean, it really is, and it's kind of funny. Last year, I was in a, you know, a huge battle to get myself into the countdown with, of all people, Bob Vandegrift. You know, it's kind of been a running joke. Last year, you know, we were enemies as far as trying to get that top 10 spot, and you know, and Bob beat us out for that last spot last year, and I am just, you know, I got to just say real quickly, I have had an absolute blast joining, you know, Bob Vandegrift Racing, and the whole team, you know, I mean, it took like no time at all that those teams just boom instantly, you know, things are clicking. And I mean, we right off the get-go early in the season, we go to a final round in Gainesville with the Parts Plus car. Bob goes and wins in Texas, you know, with the C&J Energy car. We've made a couple more finals in the Parts Plus car. And I tell you, it just goes to show you, two cars, double the data makes a big difference.
It really does. I've spoken with Bob a few times on the show, as you know, and I referenced this quote from Don Schumacher, and if there was a better person to make this assessment, I don't know who it would be, but he says that Bob is the next super team owner who is working in the right direction to become the next DSR.
I absolutely agree. I mean, Bob is just really good, you know, on the business side of things, and, you know, he looks at things from that business perspective. I mean, you know, very much like Don Schumacher has been successful in doing that, Bob is doing the same thing. And I mean, he's got such a family history, you know, in the sport, in the aftermarket. I mean, you look at Bob Sr., you know, he's owned Hedman Headers forever. You know, he was part of National Dragster. I mean, that Bob Sr. himself is a Hall of Famer. And Bob Jr., you know, he's just hopped right in there and really stepped up the whole program. And I'm certainly proud to be part of it.
And while we are speaking, in the interest of just letting people know, the voting for the Traxxas Shootout has already closed at the time of air, but at the time of interview, it is still open. And I see that Daytona 500 winning crew chief Slugger Labby has sent out a tweet in support of you, Clay, just now.
You know what? That's kind of cool, especially since there was so much trash talking going on between Bob and Slugger and myself and everybody that was involved in the NHRA versus NASCAR softball game. And I'm really, really glad that Slugger's kind of, you know, thrown his support my way for the Traxxas Shootout. And I look forward to kicking their butt again in softball next year, too.
Oh, it's great that you bring that up, Clay, because what a game. And remember the NHRA had this great shutout going until something happened?
Yeah, there was some little guy that was, you know, didn't quite make the starting lineup, and once the score was, I think, 14-0, they put this little guy out in center field, and naturally, you know, the ball gets hit right to him, and that ball must have weighed like 2,000 pounds because he couldn't pick it up no matter how he tried. And that was pretty much the end of the shutout, and that guy was me. Yes, I made a critical error, and thank goodness, though, you know, it didn't matter. We ended up winning that game big.
Quid pro quo, quid pro quo. We don't normally get to say quid pro quo on the show, but I like it. Isn't it interesting that all of a sudden you're getting tweet support from the NASCAR guys, Clay?
That is. It's really cool. And I got to say, Slugger's a cool guy. Enjoyed hanging out with all those guys. I mean, you know, Kurt Busch and Casey Kane, all those guys that came out for the softball game, that was really, really cool. And it is nice that, you know, to get a little support from those guys, and it's a lot of fun. And, you know, we have worked our tail off. My thumbs are sore from all the tweeting I did trying to get those votes for that Traxxas Shootout. I mean, I did my best to answer every single person who said they voted. That's a lot of work.
Well, it's funny because it is. Social media is such a important part of the world today with PR, and I think that you are one of the leaders in the NHRA. Because, and just looking at the list, I don't have the list in front of me, but of who in the NHRA, NHRA personalities that have the most Twitter followers, I think Courtney is in the lead. Caps is up there. You've got 57,000, Clay. You've got to be in the top three or the top five. You are right near the top. More followers than NHRA. Let's go to NHRA real quick to make sure I'm right on that.
I can tell you...
Clay, 57,020. Yep. NHRA has... 47,747. So you have more followers as a driver than NHRA does as an organization.
And I think I'm actually in front of Courtney as well.
Really? Okay.
I think so.
Clay going to get competitive here on the Twitter thing.
I can tell you who's in front of me.
Who's in front of you?
Doug Herbert. Doug Herbert is in front of me in Twitter followers. He does a great job with social media side of things. And
yes, you are beating Courtney too. She only has 42,900. So, Clay, you're in the lead.
I am in the lead. You know, I'm in the lead of folks that are out there right now. Like I say, I think Doug does have more than I do, but
we're going
he
right
started
there
on Twitter.
81,000 for Doug.
Yes, Doug's out there a ways. He is. But I tell you, I love Twitter. I really, really enjoy it. And I mean, I got to tell a quick story, if you don't mind. We're talking to social media. I got myself in trouble with Facebook. And I don't mean like personally. you hear a lot of stories of husband and wives got in trouble with Facebook, but that's a whole different subject. But
yes.
When I started my Facebook, I go into a Parts Plus store one day and I'm back in the shop, and one of the mechanics back there said he was mad at me because I didn't accept him as a friend. Well, I was not smart enough and did not do enough reading to realize that a Facebook page, you can only have 5,000 friends. Well, I couldn't accept anymore, so I literally, I had to close that thing down and start over with a fan page. And so, I'm learning this social media as I go here. And I get a lot of help on Facebook from my sister Tracy. She's a lot of help and kind of guides me and holds my hand on the Facebook side of things.
Well, it is a full-time job. There are people who are getting paid full-time to do it. And to be engaging and unique and interesting and keep everyone active so that the day that you say, hey, vote for this or vote for something, they're there for you is a big deal. So I guess we're anointing Doug Herbert the king of Twitter in drag racing right now.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. He's out there.
Got something to shoot for.
That is something to shoot for. I mean, he's good at it. I mean, he really does a great job responding to everybody. And of all the people in the current, top 10, I'm leading.
It's big. It's a big deal. It's funny. Don't worry, folks. We're going to talk about Clay's racing in a second. Don't get me wrong. But this is actually a very big deal because it's becoming the new, how would I describe it, credit score of your personality. Because there are times where people reach out or something, and I see others just immediately look at their Twitter and Twitter followers. Like, how many followers do they have? Do they have 30? They're nobody. Do they have 500? They have over 1,000? All right, they're getting there. 5,000? That's something. 10,000? Star. 20,000? Big star. Definitely got a, it's funny how people are using it as a some way to categorize others, which may or may not be a good thing, but...
Yep.
It is what it is.
And one thing that I do, and a few of us are doing this, is, if somebody follows me, I try my best to follow them back, and I think, there's some sort of index in the social media world that, that's not a good thing to do. But you know what? I want everybody to feel like, hey, Clay's following me and he answers me. And so why not? I don't know whether that's the right thing or wrong thing. Again, I wasn't very smart about Facebook, so I may not be very smart about that either. But
I read that you should have a 1 to 1.1 ratio, followers to who you are following. And this is crazy. I agree. The only problem is if you want to use your Twitter account as a means of actually keeping up with people, when you follow 50,000 people, then you're never going to see the tweets that you want to see. So it's good to have a separate account, which I do.
Nope, I figured that out, too. You can have a list.
Oh.
You can have a list of the people that you want to see every tweet they send. You just put it on a list. And before we get off of the Twitter subject, and you want to talk about who is number one in all of drag racing, and she's a lady that races in Super Comp, if you look at Tina Stoll...
Yes.
She is... head and shoulders above anybody in the track racing world.
Tina and I had an interesting introduction when I was announcing in Kansas, because, you know, and a lot of the racers and the listeners know, this is my first year going around doing some announcing with NHRA as part of the team, and right at me, "Hey, who are you?" Like, "Hey, man, I'm just here trying to..." And we became, acquaintances on Twitter. She even gave me a shout-out. I picked up some Twitter followers. Of course, all those I would prefer go to the WFO radio account, but a racer... And huge. How many followers? 224,818. Tina Stoll Racing, NHRA dragster, drag racer, and founder of Team Troops, a military support program. She's also a mom, and a Twitter coach. She's coaching you, obviously.
Yes, she is. She's helped me a lot.
How
you know,
did you get 224,000 followers?
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Brad Keselowski territory.
Exactly.
That's insanity. Well, hopefully Tina will give WFO Radio a shout-out. Maybe we could pick... I actually purchased, and this will be the final thing on Twitter, folks, but this is real organic, as they would say. I purchased a program that would automatically follow people with like-minded hashtags and such for the WFO Radio account. You know, if you liked NHRA, it would follow you, you would follow it, and then it would send you a message, "Hey, download the WFO app," because you can hear stars like Clay Milliken on the show. And it was going great. And then I had like 3,700 followers. And then the account, the program, they changed to like a monthly, subscription fee. And I thought, well, the $40 that I spent initially compared to $10 a month is a big difference. And so I stopped using it. And I lost all the followers I had gained. I went from like 3,700, which I was proud of, down to 1,200 again. And talk about like a sad feeling, like losing your friends. You've worked so hard to get these people, and then they're gone? And where are they? And
yeah.
I still haven't recovered, Clay.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of times, and there's ways to build your numbers up, but those aren't real people. You know, you never know. You know, so that's kind of the fun part of responding to as many people as I do. I know they're real, you know.
Right.
It makes a difference.
It really, really does. And some of them, you know, I'm sure they're happy. Some are angry. I tweeted something about Casey Kane not bump and running Matt Kenseth to win Bristol the other night, and I got an all caps response, and it's like, all caps, I'm a mad, not Ron caps, but all caps, that's not a good thing. That means they're yelling at you.
Exactly.
All right, drag racing, Clay. We do that too.
Yes, sir.
Final round, Chicago, close, but no dice. Final round, Brainerd. Tough competition to get into the final round, but you are knocking on the door. I keep asking you, it's probably annoying, is today the day? Because I know that the fans are feeling it. They are feeling this breakthrough. With these next couple of races, you guys are knocking on the door.
Oh, we are. I mean, this whole Bob Vandergrift operation is knocking on the door, and, you know, we're getting so close. But, I mean, you know, if you look at you know, like I say, Gainesville, we made the final. We ran good there. And we just, Pure OD got beat, you know, by Antron. We went 381, and that was about all we had. And he went 376. And, you know, we couldn't do that. We did not have that ability. And so, you know, Bob went out and spent a bunch of money and got us a lot of new cylinder heads and superchargers and fuel pumps. And after the Topeka race, we tested. And from that point on... BVR is on par with DSR. That's all I'll tell you. You know, you look at Chicago, you know, we made the final there, ran great. But if you look at qualifying at that race, it was Candyland out there, you know, the night session. And, you know, Bob goes 374 or whatever he went, and I go 75. And, you know, we made it to the final, and we lost to Schumacher. You know, we got the tires loose. And if you just look from that point forward, I mean, we've had some hiccups. You know, the Parts Plus car had a couple hiccups, and, you know, we missed qualifying at two races, which really hurt us in the points. But at the same time, we never let that hold us back. And some of that, you know, was rain. You know, that was rain shorting qualifying at both of those events. But, you know, we weren't just there to, you know, qualify. We were there to try to qualify number one because our car was running so good. And, you know, but Kurt Elliott and Jack Wyatt, you know, they are really on top of the tune-up on this car, and Rob Flynn and Mike Guger are on the edge of doing something really, really big with the C&J Energy car. I mean, we qualified number one last weekend in Brainerd, with a 77, and it doesn't matter because the run wasn't completed, but we know ourselves that Bob's car was 2/100ths quicker than my car was to the 330. So that number right there tells you that they are just right on the edge of really having another performance breakthrough with that car. And then once they get that figured out, then we just translate that over to my car. I mean, we do this back and forth, you know, trying different things and, you know, trying to elevate the performance level of both of these cars. And it's really going good. It really, really is.
It's fun to watch. Let's talk about the final round against Spencer Massey, because you had run, obviously you mentioned number one qualifier, which was huge, but you went in 83, and 82, and 81. But then in the final, Spencer goes in 81, and you guys step back a little to an 85, but at 320 miles per hour. So was that was there a parts failure? Was it just a guesstimate of what the track would hold? Was it what caused the car to run 385, as, you know, whatever you can share with us?
Well, initially, you know, we had lane choice going into the final, which means we had a quicker car than Spencer did in the semi. And so the initial looking at all the data from the run after the fact, you know, after we got beat in the final there by Spencer, you know, it looked as though we just missed the track a little bit. The track was actually a little better than we thought it was, and we did not get the wheel speed. These cars work. I mean, yes, we got to have traction, but at the same time, you also got to have wheel speed to just kind of get the car up on the tire and head it down the racetrack. So that was our initial thoughts. And then now that the guys are back at the shop and Kurt's had time to look at a few more things, I mean, he actually found something that was a little bit down, you know, in the fuel pump was a little down. I'll just tell you what it was. The fuel pump was actually starting to go down, and so it lost some of its snap at the step of the throttle. I mean, you know, it's part of it, you know, and it wasn't our time, and hopefully our time's coming, and I would love for it to be this weekend at the U.S. Nationals, that's for sure.
Isn't that the truth? And what a huge race. But then again, to win any of these next seven, talked to Spencer last week, and he said flat out he thinks you're going to win one. And it's got to be a difficult situation to be on your end, to know that things are the best they've ever been, and you're so close, and yet it hasn't happened yet. And it's just going to change the dynamic once it does happen. But the wanting, you know, I guess what, Tom Petty, the waiting is the hardest part?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, my mama's told me this a million times, a thousand times, whatever. When the time's right, it'll happen. You know, you can't make things happen, but when the time is right, it will happen. And I'm waiting for that time. You know, hopefully it's coming here soon. And truth be told, if we runnered up all the rest of the races and it wasn't the same guy in the final, we got a good chance of winning that championship.
What do you mean? You win it. I'm telling you right now, if you go out there and runner up every race, let's just say the countdown races, yep, you runner up all countdown races, Clay Milliken is the 2013 Mellow Yellow champ, and I don't think you'd have a problem with that.
No, I would not. I would not. I mean, I know that there would be, you know, a lot of guys that would swap no wins, you know, for that championship. And it's kind of amazing, Lewis Bloom and his stats, you know, that it's hard for me to believe, and I know he's correct, that, you know, I've been in more NHRA professional, I don't know if it was Nitro or Top Fuel, probably Top Fuel, you know, 146, I think it is, without a win. Nobody's ever done that. And that's kind of crazy because, you know, I used to go to the racetrack, and if I didn't win, I was very disappointed. So I think, you know, some of it may be payback for all the wins I had in IHRA. Who knows? You know, that could be part of it. But like I say, like Mama says, when the time's right, it will happen.
Absolutely. And you got a lot of people pulling for you. And to know that you've got a real legitimate shot to get in and mix it up for the championship, a good combination of driving and performance to mix it up with the big teams, is a huge deal. Clay, I want to thank you for coming on the show. We certainly wish you the best of luck, both in the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals and the countdown as a whole. It's going to be interesting watching. A lot of personalities step up. It's kind of interesting how the season goes. It's a lot of fun until you get to this point when all of a sudden it becomes very, very serious, which means it gets more fun. We want to thank you for coming on the show and hope to hear you on one of our winners' editions real soon.
Man, I hope so, too. Thank you. I always love coming on. Love WFO. Joe, you the man. Thank you, buddy.
Clay Milliken with us here on WFO Radio. So how many of Clay's 57,000 Twitter followers are still listening right now? Hopefully you are still listening, and I can make a deal with you. All right, people, let's wheel and deal right now. You're a Clay Milliken Twitter follower. You're not really familiar with WFO Radio, but you just heard Clay on, and so that's exciting. And you're wondering, well, what is this? And maybe I should check back every now and again. And what I would say to you as a very first-time listener and a Clay Milliken Twitter follower, as even on the weeks that Clay doesn't happen to be on the show, I think that you will enjoy the show because we're going inside the sport of NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing in which Clay competes. And we know that very soon Clay is going to be a winner, perhaps on a weekly or biweekly basis, which means he'll be appearing on the show an awful lot. So we'll ask you to do this. Download the free WFO Radio iPhone application or Android application. It's absolutely free. You can hear all the shows. You can hear us on Stitcher Radio if you want to do that. We're also on TuneIn Radio. You can RSS it. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can just go to WFOradio.com. But let's do an appointment for all you 57,000 Clay Milliken Twitter followers. Let's have you back next week following the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. Let's have you check in and listen. In fact, here's what I'm promising you. Clay Milliken, Twitter followers, here's the deal. I make sure, I promise, to go find Clay behind the scenes at the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals and do another one of these interviews right in the middle of the action, just for you guys. But we need you back every week. That's what we need. All right, deal? Deal. I don't know how many people out there said deal. I guess I can't know. But I certainly hope our biggest challenge here at WFO Radio, being an online show, using iPhones and Android phones and podcasts as our ways of getting out there, is convincing some of the NHRA fans who are not tech savvy to log on and listen while you work. You got your earbud in and your boss looks at you and says, man, that guy's really working hard. He's focused. And you're really listening to drag racing, corporate time-stealing weasels, which we love and we try to encourage. Anyway, thanks to Clay for coming on the show. Very, very much appreciated. And the whole social media talk, I think that it can be, let's take a second to analyze the drivers that did the best in the Traxxas shootout voting. Was there, is there a correlation to their social media presence? And I think that there is. That's a very unscientific opinion, but I'm just going to say yes. There is a direct correlation. So to the teams and drivers that say to themselves openly, eh, I don't need that stuff, there is a high likelihood that you are not going to be in the Traxxas Nitro shootout because of the social media failures. There is a high likelihood. Now, the teams that put the most emphasis on it, like we just talked to Clay, 57,000 Twitter followers, and he ends up with 26%, right behind Brittany Force. And you can understand the John Force marketing machine is second to none. And clearly that is the case. But Clay has got a really good shot compared to a lot of the other drivers. Now, that having been said, though, you never know exactly who's going to win it. It is a random draw. All right, coming up next, and this is big. It's giant. It's massive. It's larger than life. David Rayer. Rayer and Morrison. You may recall pretty recently, we've been talking about pro stock and some challenges in pro stock. And I know a lot of people love the Nitro classes, but I really love pro stock. And I will reference it in the interview. The interview is from mid-August, a couple of weeks ago. We connected with David, and I have been waiting to use it at the appropriate time. And I figure now is the appropriate time. We were either going to compile it with other interviews about pro stock, but we decided to make it a running series of interviews in WFO radio shows from now through the remainder of the year about pro stock, what can be done. For instance, 500 cubic inches, pump it or dump it. Do we keep on going 500 cubic inches or do we get rid of it? Do we go with a smaller engine? Do we go with a larger engine? Do we change the rules somehow? What is the big challenge? All the things that fans who are not knowledgeable talk about, I'm going to ask those questions because that's where I'm at. I just want to see an awesome pro stock class. I want it to be a situation where we can get back to the rivalries and the fun and the excitement that I lived and experienced in the 1980s and 90s when Frank Iaconio ran up against Bob Glidden and Lee Sheppard was battling it out. I want to remember those days. I loved it. They were the factory hot rods. Nobody left the grandstands. Nobody left the grandstands back then. The nitro cars were done, and everyone sat in their seats, and in fact, some people were like, yeah, pro stock, here it comes. We're not there right now. And there's a bunch of reasons. And we can kick around our ideas and say, well, what do we think is the answer? I've got a great friend of mine says we need to narrow the tires and get the wheelie bars off of these things so that they're all over the racetrack. And I said, so make it less safe. And he's like, yeah. But if you think about it, something needs to happen. So we reached out to the folks at Rayer and Morrison. And the first in an exclusive series of Pro Stock interviews, David Rayer, going to talk about Pro Stock when we return. But first, I want to tell you about the folks at Wilson Manifolds. You can check them out at wilsonmanifolds.com. And if you are a racer, if you have a bracket car, if you have a car that really is reliant upon beating your competition in the engine department, you understand who I'm talking to out there. You know the intake manifold is absolutely key. And these guys at Wilson Manifolds have been doing it for years and years. They have been part of Daytona 500 wins. They've been part of Sprint Cup championships. They have set records in nearly all classes of racing competition, including Pro Stock. Whether it be the intake manifold, sheet metal intake, tapered carburetor spacer for your bracket car, they can do it. Whether it be a complete nitrous oxide system, they do it. So you should open up a browser and check out wilsonmanifolds.com because they've got a lot of very cool things going. Check them out. That's wilsonmanifolds.com. We'll be back with David Rayer of Rayer & Morrison, a complete exclusive here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio. Get ready for takeoff, race fans. The NHRA Carolina Nationals are back at Z-Max Dragway September 13 through 15. There's no speed limit in drag racing, so these road rockets blister Z-Max Dragway at 330 miles per hour. Watch John Force, Antron Brown, and Courtney Force push the outer limits of speed only at Z-Max Dragway. Kids are free and every ticket is a pit pass. Call 1-800-455-FANS. The NHRA Carolina Nationals at Z-Max Dragway.
Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School. Whether you're a bracket racer who wants to get better or a thrill seeker looking to cross it off your bucket list, Frank Hawley's Drag Racing School can put you on the right track. Don't believe me? Tell him, Frank.
No matter how little or how much experience you have, we've got a program for you. So if driving a dragster is on your bucket list, there's no better time than now. And if you'd like to be a pro, well, here's the newest funny car chap, Jack Beckman.
Hey, this is Jack Beckman. Long before I was Fast Jack, I was a bracket racer who went to the Frank Hawley School. The time I spent there was some of the most exciting, intense, and fulfilling moments ever in a race car. I feel the curriculum Frank developed greatly helped me win not only the Super Comp, but also the NHRA Nitro Funny Car Championship. Frank put me on the right track. What are you waiting for?
Call them at 866-480-7223. That's 866-480-7223. 480-7223 or visit frankhawley.com.
Come rock out at the Totally Supercharged 80s party benefiting the Daryl Gwynn Foundation. Hosted by yours truly, Rock With You Entertainment. Break out the big hair, leg warmers, and power suits and come join us for dinner, drinks, and an 80s themed night of music and entertainment on September 20th at Passions Nightclub at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Tickets can be purchased by visiting DarylGwynnFoundation.org. Like, it'll be righteous and totally supports a good cause. Presented by the DMR Corporation, Settner Buyer Family Foundation, and WFORadio.com.
Android and iPhone users, download the WFO Radio app. It's sports radio for racing fans.
Thank you, I appreciate it.
The ultimate racing show, including WFO Radio NHRA Nitro, WFO Radio Ignition, the WFO Radio NASCAR Tailgate Party, news, videos, push notifications, and more.
I just hope I'm part of it.
Go to the App Store or Android Market, search WFO Radio, and download it now.
Now.
WFO Radio NHRA Nitro WFO Radio Now, back to WFO Radio.
Getting ready for the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. Of course, WFO Radio is going to be broadcasting on location. So be sure to check the website Friday, Saturday, Sunday for all kinds of updated new behind-the-scenes audio. I already made a deal with the Clay Milliken fans. All you other NHRA fans, I'm going to make a deal with you as well. We're going to be there. You can download the app. It is free, absolutely free. Download the app and get it. You can subscribe on iTunes. If you've got an iPhone or an iPod, you don't want the app, you just want to direct RSS it, you can do all of those things. Or you can click the website. Giovanni in Miami will be updating the site, but we will be there. And the folks at Redline Oil sending us over to the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals. It's going to be great. It's going to be fantastic. And I am very much looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to this next interview. On the show, been talking about pro stock a lot. As a pro stock fan, as someone who really genuinely likes and gets and wants success for the class, who feels like the great rivalries and everything that happened from Bill Jenkins through Wally Booth, through Lee Shepard and Bob Glidden and Warren and Kurt Johnson and Daryl Alderman and Scott Jeffrion and Greg Anderson and Jason Lyne and Alan Johnson and Jed Coughlin and all of those people that are made the backbone of pro stock. To see 15 cars out there is a bit disturbing, and to hear drivers talk about why. Why can we not have 50 cars like we used to see at the Gator Nationals? Why? It makes me want to ask questions, and who better to ask than some of the greats? And so in a running series of interviews we'll be doing here on WFO Radio, we will be going behind the scenes and speaking with some of the great pro stock minds of the past, present, and future. And earlier this month, we caught up with David Rayer of Rayer and Morrison Racing Engines. Of course, Bruce Allen and Lee Shepard, two of the legendary drivers that drove for Rayer and Morrison. And we spoke with David and got his thoughts on the status of pro stock. A legendary team, four consecutive championships from 1980 to 1984, with a legendary Lee Shepard driving, 44 finals and 56 races. Joining us now from Rayer and Morrison, David Rayer. David, welcome to the show. How are you?
Just fine.
Well, happy to have you on to discuss this. I remember walking into the Gator Nationals as a seven-year-old kid and seeing pro stock in the lanes. That was my first NHRA experience, the factory hot rods. Now we've got 15 cars at some races. You guys have been involved in NHRA pro stock in the glory years. I know right now, not so much a dog in the fight, but a perfect person to talk to about this. What are your general thoughts about where the class is at the moment?
Well, I think it's kind of at the same place that racing is in period. Across the board, in you know, whether you're talking about Top Fuel, Funny Car, or Pro Stock, or NASCAR, I don't think it's any different. I mean, I know it's probably more positive to talk about possible solutions instead of the problems, but I think the problem is kind of the same all the way across. I mean, I think they share a common thing, and I think, you know, everybody's faced with the same things. You talk about the pro stock being short. Well, yeah, it's short. It's short a car, and it won't be at Indy or probably Brainerd. You know, some of some people aren't doing the traveling. There's only, what, probably 12 cars going to all the races. But I think it's more an economic situation than anything else. I see that in all the categories. I mean, there's a few owners with the budgets that to run a lot of stuff. It's no different than if Top Fuel or, you know, the fuel classes. You had John Force leave with all his cars and Schumacher leave with all his. I mean, where would you be? You know, you lose a few people of, say, Schumacher, Force, and Kalita, and things would look a lot different. And pro stock is, you know, not a group owning all the cars, but it's the same sort of thing. Costs have gotten very, very high, extremely high, And that's, you know, the same thing that applies to NASCAR racing. I mean, NASCAR is down to a handful of owners. You're seeing the crowds. I don't know if how closely you follow NASCAR, but did you happen to turn the TV on and see how many people were at the Brickyard 400 to watch that?
Yes, I did.
Well, you saw that. Dave Despain was talking about it. That's not such a good state of affairs either. I think we're in it could be cyclical. I hope it's cyclical. We're in a period of regardless, the economy's strong in some areas. You know, in our area, the energy stuff is going pretty good, but across the board, incomes are down somewhat, and you know, traveling expenses are up. I mean, just the races I go to now, the airline tickets compared to what they were when we retired from pro stock. I mean, Bruce and I flew to every race for years and years and years, and airline tickets are gone up very, very high. The fuel cost of running rigs down the road is very high. I don't really see anybody that is racing for, the money anymore. I mean, we spent our whole career looking, okay, you get this much for qualifying, you win a few races, you get a little sponsorship here. I mean, this was through with, Lee and then Bruce and I and Buddy and George and all that. A whole crew was three of us going to the races, and, Bruce did very well. He was probably I don't have a count, but I know he won 16 or 17 national events and was in 40 or 45 finals and finished, second and third in points. And, he did a very good job also. But that was something that, everybody was was passionate about. And they basically, we were all willing to work for basically nothing because we wanted to go do it. And now you got a specialist in every position on every team at quite high salaries. And, you say you got the Eric Anders not out there. Well, it costs her $110,000 or $20,000 of what she got to put together to go to one race, So what are they racing? It's running out. Finding it is hard. And I don't see that any different in any of the sports. I mean, that you're talking about. I think it's going to have to run its course and kind of bottom out, and people rethink some things. Now, if you're talking about, since we're not racing anymore, we're kind of involved in different forms of even some, dirt track racing and stuff like that. There's a lot of work out there to be done, and things are going quite well. We still do, pro mod and comp and, a lot of sportsman engines, but we've branched out into some truck pulling and, where they pull the sleds and some of the dirt stuff. And the spec, as much as I'd say I wouldn't like them, but these spec classes are very healthy in this roundy-round racing now, where they got, okay, no, you use this, and this, period. And still the cream's going to run to the top, but the price of kind of what I call admittance to go do it isn't quite as high.
Sure.
I don't know how you control it. I don't know if you talk about, stick and ball sports with salary caps like NBA and NFL, that's not going to happen, I think. From where my point of view, somebody might have a whole different opinion. My point of view is it's just running a cycle, and it's going to have to bottom out and force people to rethink it.
When you say rethink it, and I think I really like the fact looking for solutions, because just kind of speaking with people that are fans of the class, that are involved in the class, that are around the class, if you speak with five people, you'll hear five different opinions. One may be that 500 cubic inches has run its course. It's no longer an engine of choice. It's too expensive to make them work, because we're talking about all that high-tech stuff you mentioned, whether it be coatings or metallurgy coming from different places, and the fact that the engines are such a unique engine. It's not like they're using them in anything else. The 500 cubic inch platform is maybe an issue. I've heard others say that there's no new young blood interested because we're running carburetors instead of computers and fuel injection, and people know that we can't go in there and go up against Alan Johnson. We know we can't beat Greg Anderson. They've been doing this so long that they've got the market cornered pretty much on talent and design. And even if we started tomorrow, and even if we had a budget, we would be so far behind them that maybe the apple cart needs to be shaken. These are just some of the things. I know you know that. Let's talk solutions. Do you think the 500 cubic inch platform should remain? Is that a benchmark of pro stock?
Well, I don't think that it's a big factor one way or the other. I mean, do you want to make them smaller, or do you want to make them bigger? You don't want to make them smaller, because the trucks kind of showed that. They were the pro stock trucks. They weren't fast enough. So if anything, you'd make the engines bigger. Okay, that might change things. The fact that, all these cars now, instead of running 650s, look, they're running 630s or something like that. I mean, would that change the things that you talked about, metallurgy, technology? No, that wouldn't change that. I mean, the best engine is still going to be the best engine, and the most highly developed valve train and the cylinder heads and all the components involved are the ones that are going to end up making the most power. And as far as fuel injection, I think fuel, we work with it some, but and it's coming along more and more. It's been slow to catch hold, that's not good. That wouldn't change the results. I mean, it's not gonna run any different. I mean, it would be something that, is a little more manageable. From, say, cylinder to cylinder, it would, make that tuning a little easier to do, rather than with the carburetors that they have to deal with, different throttle bores and boosters and, mechanical parts to change it. But it's not ultimately going to change how it runs. Now, it may create some interest for younger people, but it's not going to cut the cost. If you're talking about cutting the cost, now you may think that I'm being negative, but I work on all this stuff. I mean, I don't think it really matters what that is. I think it could maybe be more exciting if they were bigger, but it wouldn't be any more available parts. It'd still be whoever did the best job.
And
if you say Greg Anderson, they're not going to quit running their Spintron and their dynos because they got a different size engine.
And to take a second just to focus on the fuel injection side of things, because I think this is an area that has been bantered around, and people off the cuff say, well, NHRA Pro Stock still running carburetors, and you can't get a carburetor on a lawnmower these days. And maybe that's true. And I'm not in any way knowledgeable about engines, other than just having been around it a little bit. But from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, that because we're talking about a wide open throttle sport, that carburetors can actually flow as well or better than fuel injection. And so you really would be fuel injection is beneficial on motorsports where you're on the throttle, you're off the throttle, there's acceleration, deceleration, and it increases the efficiency there. But when we're talking about wide open throttle pro stock, that carburetors are actually very efficient, and it would basically just be to get computers and young people interested.
It would be a wash. I mean, you got a certain fuel air ratio, period. Whether you obtain it with fuel injection or you obtain it with carburetors, when you're talking wide open throttle, that's when you have it, period. It's not a fuel injection injecting the same fuel, the same, carrying the same BTUs, can only make the same power. There's a differential pressure engine. It's a normally aspirated engine. The only thing that goes in the cylinders is the differential atmosphere to the negative pressure. It's, you know, which is however many inches of negative you can create in a cylinder as the piston and valves move opening and the valves moving away from top dead center. That's all that you can put in that motor. It's not a pressurized intake system. So fuel injection cannot trick a motor into making more power. It's still a normally aspirated engine. So, that's a misnomer. Oh, man, it's injected in there. Well, I think it would be a good thing if they went to injection because it is modern. NASCAR finally did. It didn't really change anything in how they ran. I mean, I know some of those engine, a couple of those engine builders real well at those teams. I mean, it would be nice probably to say that you were running it, but I think that would be a good thing. But I think the key is cost and the number of people. I mean, you want to talk about solutions, but I think you got to identify the problems to find the solution.
And cost, as is the case, as you said, with everything, is extremely high to get there, the getting there, the people, the manpower, the staying there, the fuel to run down the road is all over the top these days, especially compared to back in the day. And it's just a hurdle that is so high for people to get involved with. Now, you mentioned something, salary cap. I don't know how you would maintain that or who would police it or if it's possible. You also mentioned spec series. That does kind of go against the nature of the all-out technology war that pro stock has always been, but we see a lot of sports doing it.
Well, they're doing it because of car counts. I mean, they're scratching. You know, they're trying to see what they can do. No, you can't control a salary cap. I'm just talking about the same problems that have happened in, say, NFL and NBA, where they got, okay, well, we got the big market teams and the small market teams, and they went to start doing that, and they even TV sharing of money, because, you know, a Green Bay could never compete with a team based in a large market if they had to survive off of what their market got for them, you know. So, but that, you know, that's not going to happen. I'm just saying that's what happens in our, I just see it all across all forms, that anything you want to talk about, it's cost related. I mean, whether, you know, it's somebody's stadium saying, well, I can build the cowboy type stadium for $1 billion, or some other market can't, you know.
You mentioned Erica Enders, and the number $100,000 has been thrown out there, and I don't know if that's exactly the number, close, within a percentage. I'm sure I've heard it a couple of times now, so it's close. Well, on the broadcast this past week, they mentioned that to win, you're going to make like $40,000, ballpark in that area, and that math just doesn't seem to add up in my mind. Where we're talking about a class that is. Warren Johnson has always said the nitro cars were a bit of a circus, and that certainly brings the fans. The pro stock class has always been what I would call more for the die-hard racers, a lot of the sportsman racers, a lot of the engine builders, a lot of the people who are really hardcore people. They stay in the stands. Are those numbers ever going to be able to match? And if they don't, then what is that? What does the future hold? Is this something that is going to dwindle? Unless some sort of influx of money or cost reduction happens, it doesn't seem like it could work.
It just depends upon it. The way I see it, the cost, if people with spending a lot of money start to lose interest, then that'll lower the cost somewhat, and some people will come in to take their place. I mean, it does. The NASCAR teams don't, their purse doesn't cover their expenses. I mean, there's not a single form of racing that it does. I mean, people have got to want to do it. There's always somebody behind it that wants to do it. You know, and that's kind of, and it's a lot, you know, that's what it takes. And in the Erica Anderson thing, that's a typical cost of just about any team trying to run a car. I mean, she just has to come up with it. In her case, I guess, I don't know Roger, but I know Victor. I know that, you know, I know people in Pro Stock, and those are the kind of numbers. I mean, an engine rental program, just an engine itself, is, you know, $50,000. So the engine is more than the purse. But the engine's more than the purse in Super Comp, too. You know, I mean, that's people, they like doing it. I mean, you don't make money hunting and fishing. I mean, it's just, do you like doing it or not? And that's kind of the situation that has happened, and wealthier people have enjoyed doing it. And so that's what I see is what has brought the cost up. And then what will bring the cost out is if some of the money gets burned out or something, you know. And that's happened in the past.
A final thought, and David Rayer from Rayer and Morrison.
Yeah,
with us here.
I wanted to say one thing.
Sure.
I don't agree with Warren Johnson that the fuel racing is a circus. I mean, that's a high tech thing too, and it's very expensive to do. And I know some of those guys real well. I know all the data they compile. I know the details they work with. It's similar to Pro Stock. It's a very high tech thing. I mean, when you start talking, they work through a lot of the same things, all the cams and valve trains and the blowers and the fuel systems, and that's no accident that some of them do a better job than other ones. You know, it's not a matter of just throwing some parts together and going fast, because they're all running the same fuel, so it's the same thing. They're all running the same blower, you know, so it's all... Actually, the fuel classes is more of a spec class than Pro Stock by far. If you read the NHRA rule book, they got valve size rules, they got valve angle rules, they got cam placement rules. It's, you know, you got blower rules. It's quite controlled. You got the size of the fuel pump. Pro Stock is probably the least spec class of any form of racing.
And there is and in Warren's defense, that's a quote from several years back, and you know, hopefully we'll find out if he feels the same way.
Well, he might. I'm not saying. I'm just saying that you know, it's easy to feel that way when you're running Pro Stock, but you know, when you're not for a while, and you see more open what I see from my eyes and know people like. At different teams and guys that I've known that have worked on modified eliminator cars that even raced them, that are key fuel crew chiefs right now. These guys aren't any dummies, you know, and it's all very competitive.
What about,
and it's all very expensive.
What about the word stock in that? Pro Stock, at some point, the cars really resembled cars that were on the showroom floor, and you mentioned the NASCAR Sprint Cup Series a couple of times, and I do follow and enjoy it, and they went out of their way this past year to make the cars that we see on the track much more closely associated to what's on the showroom, basically because the manufacturers said, hey, we need you to do this if we're going to continue to market our products using your sport. Thinking about the cars that are on the showroom floor now, whether it be the ZL1 Camaro with this 556 horsepower and the supercharger, and all of those things, the Mustangs, the Challengers, just the cars that are out there that are available, they are very advanced, they are very powerful. We're seeing them in super stock, and we're seeing them in those classes with the Copo Camaro and everything. Do you think, and just one of those ideas, do you think that pro stock perhaps should more closely resemble those cars?
I don't think so. I mean, I don't see the pro stockers being, I can't really agree with you with the NASCAR thing. I've been looking at the shops and the templates. I just came back from one of the shops. Yeah, they've managed to give those cars a little identity, but it's not much. It's nothing that anybody can recognize on, you know, TV or from the stands. Yeah, it might have a different sticker package on it, and you know, the wrap is a little different, but when you're trying to make an even playing field, then if it was like the Copos or the Mustangs or, you know, the Challengers or stuff, well, then it would just turn into everybody racing whichever one was the best one to race, and then you just have a whole bunch of one of those cars. You know, and that's why NASCAR's got everything so closely regulated. And actually, if you saw an engine out of a Ford or a GM or a Toyota, and Dodge isn't racing this year, you couldn't even tell me which one was which. They're all identical. You know, they're not separate. They're not based on a factory engine. They're not they're spec'd in every way.
Interesting.
I don't have a good answer for it. I mean, I might be the wrong person to ask, but there's not a good answer for it.
We seem to be finding, and that's the reason we're doing the show, David, and I really appreciate it, because someone such as yourself who has been in it for as long as you have, and even the way that you guys are innovating in many areas, for instance, just the fact that you can order a super comp engine, you know, almost over the internet and have it arrive and know exactly what you're getting with in terms of power and reliability. That's you've been innovating in the engine field for a long time, and so your opinions are valuable in terms of where we're going. It's just unfortunate, because it sounds like with all that knowledge and experience, we are still stymied at the fact that extremely high costs are just going to limit participation at some level.
That's my opinion. Yes, and I, you know, that's what I see. I see it in all forms. I mean, there's very few NASCAR teams either. I mean, they used to be all individual teams racing cars. The cost went up. Couldn't do it. You know, they're scrambling for sponsorship. I mean, you got teams is the most popular driver in NASCAR with Junior, with, you know, I mean, he's got 12 races. He doesn't have a sponsor for us. You know, you can read it. You know, they're scrambling. They're going to find him. But, you know, the sponsors aren't even signing up for the whole year. You followed enough to know that.
Sure.
You know, and costs have gotten very, very high. And I'm not saying anything's wrong with that. This is a free market system. I mean, I believe in capitalism firmly, and it will adjust itself. But it's probably getting close to where it's going to have to adjust itself. I don't think you can legislate an adjustment into it and say, "Oh, this will fix everything." I think it has to be, forces that cause it to happen.
And there is a very important point in that. The old Alan Reinhardt, who comes on the show, always likes to say, you know, if I was czar, you know, the person who is the supreme leader, who could make a decision and make a change with, edict immediately, if there was that power, there isn't a change that could be made to fix the problem, especially if a person has the funding and chooses to spend it. Even if you were to, like NASCAR did a couple of years ago, put a gear rule in place to limit the RPM, and thus hopefully the engine builders wouldn't go to Mars to try to find special metals that would rev to 13,000, They'll spend it somewhere else. If they choose to spend the money because, as you said, they want to, they're going to spend it on something that they feel like is going to give them an advantage. So if you were czar, is there something you would say to try to make an improvement?
I think if you're trying to make an improvement and get more participation, you just have to figure out how to lower the cost. I mean, that's what I see. If you want more participation, you're going to have to lower the cost.
David, I want to thank you for taking time with us here today. Your opinions and knowledge is much appreciated by myself and my audience. This is a kind of conversation that, you know, even if we end up right where we started at the beginning with no positive solution, the way we got there and the understanding you've given us about what's going on and how difficult it is to spin one of these 500 cubic inch engines and get the kind of power out of them that they do, I think that's an area that maybe most people don't understand or appreciate exactly how radical and wild these things are. And what we are seeing out there is a special thing. And maybe that in and of itself will increase awareness and understanding and appreciation of pro stock.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed talking to you and probably talk to you sometime in the future.
David Rayer of Rayer & Morrison with us here on WFO Radio, where we are delving into the world of pro stock. And I found many of his answers interesting, intriguing, and also, in a way, disappointing and disheartening. Because if it is a cycle, that means we have to ride out the cycle. And when will the cycle turn around? And I know that many people have said, well, when spots become available, then teams like Matt Hartford are going to show up and try to make the show. And they have done great. They really have. And other teams will step in and step up and fill that spot and say, wait a second. How can there only be 15 cars in a national event? We're going to go and we're going to run in front of the big show. And that is a huge deal. It doesn't get any bigger than the NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing Series. But on the flip side, every one of those people earn by showing up, by spending the money, by showing up and qualifying. They earn a first round date with Mike Edwards, Alan Johnson, Jeg Coughlin, Vincent Nobile, Greg Anderson, or Jason Line. Thanks for playing. And it is tough. It is very tough. It is tough to come out of that 16 hole in pro stock. In Top Fuel and Funny Car, we see it a lot. But in pro stock, it's very, very tough. Because those guys, they are the best of the best of the best. But we shall see. Interesting ideas and concepts, and this is a running theme that we're going to follow over the coming weeks and months as we continue to pursue knowledge here on WFO Radio NHRA Nitro. Hopefully you liked it. Maybe you're a racer, a stock eliminator, or a super stock racer, or an engine builder, or just a fan of Rayer and Morrison listening to the show for the first time. You heard this. Hopefully you liked it. Hopefully I asked intelligent questions. Of course, the man is at another level when it comes to engine knowledge, and it's one of those situations I consider myself more like a fan trying to bridge the gap between the average fan and the people with the knowledge, and hopefully they converge here on WFO Radio. Hopefully you will subscribe, download the app, and listen to the show on a weekly basis. Now we're going to take a quick break and then come back with a final wrap-up of the show as we get ready for the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, but I want to remind everybody, the Daryl Gwynn Foundation is having their totally supercharged 1980s party at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Hollywood, Florida on September 20th. That's not that far away. If you want tickets, click the banner ad on the front page of WFO or go to DarylGwynnFoundation.org. It's for a really, really good cause. They're going to give away a $40,000 wheelchair to a young boy from Sunrise. Check out the foundation website. See all that Daryl and his team do for so many different people. The 80s party is going to be great. And if you're in the South Florida area, going to be in the South Florida area, or ready to make the travel down from Orlando or wherever you are, if you are in Antarctica and you want to make the travel arrangements yourselves, I got tickets for you. I got one pair of tickets, two tickets. Email me, joe@wforadio.com. and you will be in the random running for the tickets. And if you just want to buy them, go to DarylGwynnFoundation.org. It's sponsored by the folks at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, DMR Corporation, the Settner Buyer Family Foundation, and, of course, WFO Radio. Check them out at DarylGwynnFoundation.org. We'll be back with a wrap here on WFO Radio.
This is WFO Radio.
Redline Synthetic Oil has been building the world's finest motor oil, gear oil, and additives, like our popular water wetter, for over 30 years. Think we're just for racers? Think again. Redline has the multi-grade viscosity available for your domestic, European, or Japanese vehicle. From 0W20 to 5W30, even 10W60, Redline motor oils are specifically designed to exceed the factory's demands, giving you longer drain intervals at lower oil temperatures. Is your off-the-shelf motor oil missing the zinc you need to protect your camshaft? Every bottle of Redline motor oil has more than enough zinc to suit your engine's needs. The same ester-based stocks found in Redline motor oil are also in our gear oils for manual transmissions and differentials, known around the globe as the best in protection, regardless of price. Check us out at redlineoil.com to find a dealer, or even buy online. Racing technology engineered for the street. That's Redline Oil.
Get ready for takeoff, race fans. The NHRA Carolina Nationals are back at ZMAX Dragway September 13 through 15. There's no speed limit in drag racing, so these road rockets blister ZMAX Dragway at 330 miles per hour. Watch Sean Force, Antron Brown, and Courtney Force push the outer limits of speed only at ZMAX Dragway. Kids are free and every ticket is a pit pass. Call 1-800-455-FANS. The NHRA Carolina Nationals at ZMAX Dragway.
If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out WilsonManifolds.com, the leader in intake manifold and nitrous oxide development. They've set records and won championships in just about every series in professional racing. Sprint Cup, Nationwide, Camping World Truck Series, NHRA Pro Stock, right up to the Nitro classes. If you're looking for extra horsepower, check out the leader in intake and nitrous development at WilsonManifolds.com.
The stars of drag racing. WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Cruz, what about the guys with the heads? You had some fans that really, they got a lot of TV time for you, a lot of TV time for your old mustache, which it's like, hey, there's Cruz with the mustache. What about those guys?
Oh, you know, and I, here's the funny thing about it, is a couple people told my brother, hey, these guys have your guys' head like fat heads, like walking around with them, and but they painted a mustache on one of you guys. And I looked at them thinking, they didn't paint that thing on. That's what I had. And I was supporting one of them in the early 90s, you know. And I look at it now thinking, oh, man, of all the pictures, you could have. In fact, it looked like I had an afro even.
NHRA Nitro is available on demand anytime on the WFO Radio application and at WFOradio.com. Now, back to WFO Radio, NHRA Nitro.
Final segment, NHRA Nitro here on WFO. And normally we just kind of wrap it up after the final interview. But considering the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals is this week, and I'm hoping I've got a lot of first-time listeners. Maybe you're driving or flying or you're listening on a plane to the show. I just wanted to come back and do a final segment where we kind of wrap up the news and the issues of the day and the week. Because this has been a very big year in NHRA Mellow Yellow Drag Racing, and to this point, it has been very big and important, but it is about to get so much more important. The Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, the big go, it is the Daytona 500, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the NBA Finals, and it really needs to be treated with that kind of hype and respect. So if you've got friends at home that aren't drag racing fans or neighbors and whatnot, you're probably going to want to tell them, hey, this is the big drag race. This is what we've got going on. Check it out. Watch it. Plus, the Traxxas shootouts are going to be great. Of course, WFO Radio is going to be on location there. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we're going to be posting audio into our WFO Radio app and onto the website and on our Facebook page, and we're going to be spreading it out there. It would be great if you guys, the audience, the people who stick around for the Joe Talks in the final segment, would share and retweet and push the show, because we're going to go behind the scenes as much as we can, I kind of got a new strategy I'm going to work that I've been telling you about with this program that we're going to do, programming we're going to do from the Nationals. I really want you to feel as if you are as close as possible. Of course, you're listening to the audio cast and the audio stream and watching on ESPN3, and they're doing a great job, by all means. But WFO Radio, I like to think we are carving out our own little niche, our own little world, our own little spot with the fans, our own little area with the drivers and the fans, the things we can do, the things we can talk about. So be ready for it this weekend. Chevrolet Performance, U.S. Nationals. News of the day. I think it's cool that Bob Vandegrift breaking out the third car. I think it's cool that Billy Torrance breaking out a second car with Steve Torrance. Steve is breaking out a second car for his dad, but they are breaking out a second car together. It's the U.S. Nationals, the Chevrolet Performance U.S. Nationals, and Chevrolet Performance coming on board. How big a deal is that? Everyone was disappointed. Ford was leaving, but maybe an inroad with Chevrolet. It would be great. It would be nice to have a major manufacturer involved with drag racing on a regular basis. It would be huge. And, of course, you can't forget Mack Tools, who were the sponsor for so many years. That is all very, very important. Just big things going down. And to all of you who sent in a question for Alan Reinhart, that is much appreciated. You can do that anytime by calling it in, 954-889-6796. Anytime, day or night. It works just like a voicemail. Call it in. Hey, this is Lenny. I'm in Duluth. Here's my question. WFO. And then you're done. And I will come back, and before the show, before we talk with Alan, we'll find it. Or stockpile it for the next time. The Snake and Mongoose movie. Richard Blake was awesome. What a nice guy. He's going to be out there. I'm sure we'll speak with him again. But if you want to support drag racing, a very good way to do it is to go see Snake and Mongoose as soon as it is in the theater near you. And it has been told to me by not just one, but everyone, that in this modern era of DVD and movies and on demand and all of that, that a movie can be in the theater for 2 days. If after the second day, the theater owner, many of them are private proprietors, say, you know, this is not what we think it's going to be, it's gone. So the first day, you got to represent. And at very least, they'll say, well, this has had good first couple days, let's stick it around. Or other theaters will pick it up. I would love to see this movie get traction out there. It's a summer of racing movies. Not summer anymore. It's going to be the fall and winter of racing movies. And I would love to see Snake and Mongoose do well. As I have mentioned, I am the target. I grew up with this. This is my era, the Hot Wheels. I was the kid that Tom McEwen and the guys at Mattel were marketing to. It was me. And, oh, by the way, it worked. And it's a lesson. It's a lesson how eaten up with your toys and all of it you can become over your life. It really is. And so I am very excited to see the film. I'm very much looking forward to it. The Traxxas Shootout fan vote, downtown Indianapolis, Wednesday noon. You should go. If you're in the area, go out there and represent. Tim Wilkerson has the lion's share in Funny Car. I think that's a bit of a surprise, but also a show of strength for Tim Wilkerson. 40%. That's very impressive. And Brittany Force and Clay Milliken, the top two in Top Fuel. So it could go any way. Tony Pettergon got 2%. He could end up in the Traxxas Shootout. It is a random draw. But Alan Reinhart and fans will be down there, finding out, deciding, and it is a big festival. It is a fun atmosphere. It is a reason to go down there. If you're going to be in the area, John Force Racing, they've got an open house on Thursday, which I have seen and witnessed. And I must tell you, if you are a drag racing fan, this is something you absolutely have to do. The NASCAR fans, they make the pilgrimage to Charlotte, North Carolina, many between the Coke 600 and the All-Star Race, and go do the shop tours. And I don't think that most NHRA fans have done this. It's something you need to do. JFR on Thursday, along with several other teams. I know, and I don't want to speak specifically because I don't know any other than John Force Racing and Don Schumacher Racing. John does his on Thursday, and some other teams do theirs on Thursday, and it is a wild party, car show, live bands, music, fun, autographs, tour the shop, see exactly what we're talking about here, and DSR on Friday, and same deal, Friday night, fireworks after qualifying, final pair going to go off, and the fireworks are going to go off. There's just so many things going on. WFO Radio is going to be there. And we are going to be tweeting up with our listeners. So hopefully you follow on Twitter. I'm going to start a new segment called Tweets to Joe, which is things people tweet at me. For instance, the Drink Hard Racing people were tweeting at me, thanking me for the mention on last week's show, and I'm throwing it right back at them. No, Drink Hard Racing, thank you for my Zoo Crew shirt, for building a brand in drag racing, for being a work hard, play hard bunch. Follow them at Drink Hard Racing. But there was like 10 tweets of the show, and that's exactly what we need to get the word out. And, of course, Clay Milliken for coming on, Brittany Force for coming on, Alan Reinhardt for answering your questions. I mentioned Rich Blake and the David Rayer interview. Now, I've got a lot of targets for my pro stock segment interviews that we're going to go after and ask a lot of similar questions. The questions will be similar. Will the answers be? I don't know. But it's been a great year to this point. Of course, my own experiences track announcing with the NHRA. I will be in Charlotte. Would love to see you there. You can get your tickets by clicking the banner ad on WFOradio.com. I will be there. I will be in Dallas. I will be in Maple Grove. Those are the races I will be at in an official capacity, of course. But it is now so important. And things to think about. Is Andrew Hines going to make the countdown? Is Ellie Tonglet going to make the countdown? And if they make the countdown, who is going to miss the countdown? In pro stock, the field is set. And it looks like Erica Ender Stevens is not, nothing is going to happen. There's not going to be that 11th hour pardon. Did I use that right? The company that swoops in and says, you know, we're going to let you run for the championship and see what you guys can do. Is that really not going to happen? Because Erica has got a deal to run in a pro mod car. That's disappointing. Disappointing. I was really thinking that at some point someone would swoop in. Swoop. But they did not. That is interesting. There's a lot of different angles. But I think most importantly, you've got the title defense of Antron Brown. Is that team going to emerge? And it was a huge compliment. I know that the guys from the Matco team listen to the show. And in fact, one of your Matco teammates, who will go nameless, guys, was like busting my chops about how much you guys are into the show. The idea that you guys want to represent the fact that you're fans of the show, it doesn't get better than that for me. That is awesome. The title defense of Antron Brown's Matco Tools team. The guy has been down, not out, but can they pick it back up? It starts this weekend. That is an interesting story. In Funny Car, who is going to miss it? Who's going to miss the show? Alan kind of said, is it going to be Dell? Is it going to be Dell? First year back, Dell driving a funny car, barely makes the countdown. Does Connie go into quote-unquote mad scientist mode? Maybe, but I don't want to make it such a minor thing. Oh, I missed the countdown. Missing the countdown is a huge, huge problem. You've got to make the countdown. This drama that we are feeling. Del Worsham's the kind of guy, if he makes the countdown, he can win the championship. They can do it, but they got to make the countdown. So there's just so many angles, so many ins, so many outs. I'm interested to see if Alan Johnson in Pro Stock can repeat. And will Roy Johnson pull off the stated goal that he told me last week in Brainerd, which is the top three in points? Roy Johnson has set the goal, the top three in points. That's what he wants. And he told me very flat, doesn't care the order. It could be Vincent Jeg Allen for all he's concerned. Now, I know he'd be disappointed, but he'd still be proud. And will Mike Edwards and Alan Lindsay and those guys be able to stop them? Will they be able to maintain the performance advantage? Going into all these races recently, it's been like Can Mike Edwards qualify number one again, and will he win the race, or will someone beat him on a hole shot somewhere? That's been the story. That's not really acceptable anymore. Now, that hole shot loss in the first or second round could be the difference between winning the championship and not. All these other sports hype the heck out of their premier race or event. There's major media outlets, there's Radio Row, there's interviews, there's discussion, there's analysis, there's ins, there's outs, there's ups, there's downs, there's everything. And everyone in the drag racing world is converging on Indianapolis and Lucas Oil Raceway. They're converging on the epicenter of the drag racing world to see how this is going to turn out every step along the way. And we're going to be there. If you download the WFO Radio app, enable push notifications, please, so you know when there's new audio in the app. That's what the push is going to be. It's going to be new audio in the WFO app. Of course, subscribe to our YouTube channel. Carlos Hockenstuff has been working on the YouTube channel, and it is very cool. We got a lot of great launches there. A lot of great launches. We got the new Topless in Miami auto review episode. How about Tony Schumacher in a tie with Bob Glidden? Can he break the record? All of these things. It's all going down in Indianapolis, beginning tomorrow, with the drawing of the Traxxas Shootout winners, 12 noon, Allen Reinhardt, downtown. Get ready. And of course, at some point, me and the great Giovanni in Miami and the WFO team are going to hit Elmo's. Got to do it. Got to do it. Got to hit Elmo's. Got to get the cocktail and enjoy it. Speaking of enjoying it, I have enjoyed this. I have a great time hanging out with you folks wherever you are. Hopefully, you're listening on your way to Indy. And we will be there as well. You know, we do another show here on WFO Radio. It's called Ignition. And I can tell you, on this week's show, we've got some controversy to discuss. Controversy one, why did Casey Kane not bump and run Matt Kenseth to take the win at Bristol? We are shocked about that. And is it a softness among drivers? It's like the gladiators, right? It's the gladiators, it's the Roman Coliseum, and everybody's got the thumbs down out, and Casey Kane, like, walks away and lets Kenseth go on to victory. So we're going to get into that. We're going to get into the IndyCar Scott Dixon penalty. Did that guy actually get hit on purpose on pit road? Really? I don't know. I don't think somebody would do that. But that's certainly what Scott Dixon and the Ganassi guys are suggesting, that he walked into the car on purpose to take the charge of a 650-horsepower IndyCar. Maybe. Of course, Sebastian Vettel dominated Formula 1, a fantasy league. He's just, I am the worst fantasy player in the history of the world. But it's a fun show, and we have fun doing it. Check it out, Ignition. Remember, you can subscribe to all our stuff on iTunes. We'd love for you to call on the show, Facebook page, YouTube channel, all the social media stuff. We love it, and we love you guys. Certainly appreciate it. That's going to do it. We'll see you next time. One more big thanks to everybody involved: Richard Blake, Clay Milliken, Brittany Force, David Rayer, Allen Reinhardt, and all of the people who asked questions for Allen Reinhardt. That was great stuff. We'll see you next time. See you in Indy, right here on WFO Radio.
The views and opinions of the hosts, guests, or callers do not necessarily reflect that of the station ownership, advertisers, or agencies.